I am back. And now the show can officially begin, Roger.
I think that's a marvelous thing.
Yes, isn't that nice? I mean, you know, yeah, I could have started cold.
No.
As they say in the business.
Yeah, you're a pro. You could have.
But, you know, this just makes it more official.
It feels right.
Yes, it does. So now, welcome. I don't mind that because I frequently enjoy, you know, peeling back the curtain.
Oh, yeah.
And allowing the audience a peek at what goes on before those microphones are hot.
Yeah.
And so that was a nice peek.
Yeah, very good peek. Now, in fact, it was a long stare.
Yeah.
But
it was more than a peek. Yeah. Well, you know, in fact, that's the one thing. I know we're in this, you know, you're always on some platform somewhere.
All right, 24/7.
But what first attracted me to radio as a listener, and then what attracted me to want to be on the radio was the anonymity of it. Is that the right word? Anonymity? Yeah. Anonymity. There it is.
Yeah.
Anonymity.
Your M and your N mixed up.
Yeah. I used to know her. Anonymity.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. She was my third grade teacher.
Didn't she sing backup?
Yeah. But the anonymity of it. I'm still saying it wrong.
Anonymity.
Anonymity.
Thank you.
Let me make it easier. The theater of the mind.
There you go. But while also
and now there's all these cameras everywhere.
Oh, I know.
And so you can't. You know, I mean,
where am I here? By the now we're on the wide shot. Last week we were on the
I'm looking at you on your camera here. My gosh, you look like you're in Michigan Control.
I'm on the on the ship that sails the sea.
And then for some reason our camera, I've got this
your head's cut off.
This mood light going on too. It's not as light as usual.
Wait a minute, how did that happen?
I don't know,
because the cameras look fine.
Because I have the lights very bright in
here.
So
if people are wondering what we're talking about, if you go to WGNradio.com, you can actually click on the link to see and hear. What's going on?
Which is my point in that, you know, I love the
anonymity.
The anonymity.
You got 4 hours to get this right.
I'm going to just keep saying that word now for 4 hours. There we go. You know what? On all my sheets here, all my preparation.
You got it all written down?
No. Nowhere on there does it say mispronounce anonymity and then use it for the next 4 hours. Nowhere on there. I did not. I can't believe I didn't plan the anonymity misphrasing or mispronunciation. I didn't even plan for that.
It's easy for you to
say. And now I have to cancel more guests.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah.
Between finding out it's Aubrey the engineer's birthday and have to throw him a party now.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then the whole anonymity mispronunciation bit, which seems to be already a classic.
It is.
Yeah.
I think we've already marked the tape and put it up on his podcast.
Yeah, Bruce Dumont's already called for that at the Museum of Broadcasting. That along with the misfire at the beginning.
Yeah,
can we
right.
have the... Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, don't. It's not your... No.
No. Poor,
no, Jessica, get on
please.
The... Get, no, wait. She's... No. Get... No. That's not your fault.
No.
Don't, I'm not making fun of you. Please.
No, Jess.
That is not your fault at all. Don't take offense to that. There's no... go on the... Don't talk to me on the air. Talk to me on the air. Yeah. No, just so everybody knows. I'm not making... No.
No, please. We're not making fun.
Not at all. I don't mind that. I'm not one of these people. There's some people that, you know, if there's the slightest miscue, their heads explode and they can't go on. It's like, you know what? The way I look at it, the more mistakes, the more charming my show is.
Makes you personable.
I think people that listen to an Elton Jim, they want to hear the mistakes. That's my charm.
They expect the mistakes.
I don't, the people talk about in the business, they talk about... It's called, what we have in front of me with all these buttons and all these little levers is called the board.
Right.
And so the goal for most radio hosts, whether you're a music host or a talk radio host, the term is to have a tight board.
Yes.
And that means there are... No, I don't mean that. So that means...
I have to let out my belt a little bit.
Well, that's my point. I'm getting to that. So everybody wants a tight board, meaning that there's no dead air and you talk.
No delays or anything.
Once you talk and then you go right to a commercial and it hits, and once the commercial ends, you come back and I go, here's Roger with the news, and he starts and everything's just boom, boom, and there's not any
dead air. There's no ums or uhs does or...
Right. Now, my show...
Yeah.
Mine's an elastic board.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know the pants you wear?
Sansa belt.
Yeah. Yeah, you know the pants you wear on Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Yes.
That, stretchable.
I love that. I have a Sansa belt show. Definitely. And look and Google that if you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Because that's a great joke. If you don't get it, Google it, because Roger just had a great joke. So I have no problems when things go wrong. In fact, I like it, because then it just keeps you on your toes and you have fun with it. And as I've worked with Jessica now 3 or 4 times. It was kind of nice. We're actually getting a nice chemistry, and I always enjoy working with Roger. But please, Jessica, please know, and this is Jessica Raines, my producer tonight, please know that anything that is said in the next 3.5 hours, almost 4.
Yeah.
Is all in jest. There is nothing serious being said here. If there is a joke said about you, it is for pure entertainment's sake. There is nobody is mad. There
never
is nothing.
Never at one's expense.
Never.
Either.
Well, no, I will.
Oh, all right.
No. I like to have the atmosphere of a celebrity roast. Don't get me wrong. I'll go for the jugular, but once the mics are off and you're on your way home, nothing. I don't remember anything I said, mean or nice,
until the podcast comes out.
That's the other side of the coin. But no, so please, I've never take offense. Like I said, there's some people that get all freaked out if something doesn't go wrong, and I actually. If it goes wrong, I just roll with the punches and have fun with it. So, by all means, Jessica, there's no need to apologize, because it's not your fault, first of all.
No.
Although I did tell her to restart it, and she didn't. But beside the point. No,
don't tell her that.
Just between you and me.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Uh-oh. She just said her board is cracked. Once again, don't talk in my ear. Talk in the air. That's fine. What did you say? Say it on the
air.
Yes. Your board is cracked?
Yeah, on my mic side, there's a little crack above the screw.
Already?
My gosh, it's brand new. A month and a half.
Yeah.
In fact, go ahead. What were you saying?
Oh, Jessica? I just potted up my mic board here, and the little thing shifted because it's cracked some more.
Uh-oh.
This place is
a
dump
what
already.
You touch.
It's already a dump.
Don't. Let's move.
Yeah.
We need a new place.
Is the John Hancock building open?
I need some of that. What is it? That glue?
Yes, flex glue.
Flex
I bet
seal.
That would fix it.
Flex seal. Yes. Yeah. It's rubber glue. Hey, I'm Phil Swift. In fact, we were just talking about that last week.
I just saw it yesterday.
Oh, how could you not?
Yesterday afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
He had everything there. The tape, the paint, the caulk.
Did you see the dune buggy that he breaks apart?
Oh, I've seen that one before,
And then he cuts
I'm going to put this dune buggy back together.
Yeah, and he cuts the boat and puts with the sharks.
Yes.
I do need some flex seal, though.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there's a few little... Well, there's a few little things around the house I could use a little flex seal for. No. I mean, serious stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
But to get to Jessica's point here, so the station's been here about a month or so now.
And a couple months, yeah.
When I came here last week, filling in for Matt Bubalov, which I am doing, I had never been in this studio before. There was the first studio that was on the other side. They opened that one. They were getting this one ready.
Mm-hmm.
And now the one that we're in tonight is now the main studio and has been for, I assume, for a couple of weeks. But so the last week when I came here, I did not know we were going to use this studio. Because if I would have known, Roger, as you may recall, when I was in the first studio...
I just realized I got a close-up.
I officially christened that studio
with,
of course...
Oh, there it is.
Spritz of... Yeah. Cashmere Woods.
Just light on the cashmere.
So I was not aware last week that I would be in this studio.
You didn't bring their cashmere wood
with you. So I didn't bring it. And I was going to bring it yesterday because I was in the studio, but then I felt as if, well, you know, I mean, I filled in for Matt when I christened it the first time.
Right. It only right.
So I'd rather do it again.
Right.
Now on okay. this show. So I saved it for tonight. So I now mm-hmm. I know that this studio's been in use for 2 or 3 weeks already.
Ready? Hold
if
on.
If not more.
I got to give you the drum roll. Ready?
Yes. Oh, you have the drum roll?
Ready? I'm going to hear.
Oh, there you go. Oh, wow. Yeah, there's no wait, no special effects spared here.
Hold on a second.
Oh my God.
Here
I go. I had better special effects in college. Okay. It is now officially christened.
There you go.
And that's probably one reason why Nick DiGilio never doesn't use this studio. He uses the old one because he doesn't want to smell my cashmere woods.
I think he asked last week if you had been in there. I think, maybe. I don't know.
But anyway, so now it's officially christened. We don't use champagne. We don't use wine. We use Glade cashmere woods.
Mm.
A hint of vanilla, citrus, and amber.
The amber, I think, is what does it.
Oh, the amber is definitely what does it. Yeah. And as I said, there's a lot of people. I have to say, I discovered this stuff about two years ago, and I'm not joking. When I first, I'd never heard of it, and when I found it on the shelves, I was looking for a new scent because I've said many times my old scent when I went to the store,
right?
Which I believe was what was it called? Was it linen? It may have been linen.
Yeah, it was. I remember you talking about linen.
Yes, it may have been linen.
Yeah.
So they didn't have linen, and I tried to find a new scent, and I sprayed this like I was at the scent counter at Macy's.
Right. We're trying. You're
and I found
it.
Cashmere Woods. Oh, jeez.
That's easy. Right in your face.
I think I know how to use it by now.
This thing's not loaded.
And so I started talking about it on the radio and on my weekly podcast. And when I go to stores now...
Mm-hmm.
There's sometimes where there's none left
because everyone's bought it.
I do believe that I have had a spike in people have been writing me on my Facebook page. Oh my gosh, I tried that cashmere woods. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a guy that used to call in. He would either drive his Uber or he drove a cab, and he bought some and sprayed it.
In the cab, or
in the car, whatever he had, and people were coming in and saying, oh my goodness, this car smells so great.
Yeah.
Now, Dean Richards hates.
He hates it when you spray
my cashmere woods. Yeah,
really?
When I would come on his show a few times, I'd bring it in, he's like, don't spray that crap around me. Good old Uncle D. So it used to be a shtick, but I could see in his eyes he wasn't joking.
No.
So I don't bring that around anymore.
Yeah.
But when I'm on my own,
No.
A nice little spritz.
Yeah, it's a little bit goes a long way. You know,
So as I said, Jim Toronto here filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Got lots of stuff planned for you today after the break. And Roger, I'd like you to jump in as well as Jessica, because she right off the bat, she's got a lot to make up for after the beginning of the show. Once again, just a joke.
Yeah.
The weather's been so nice.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, that we've been going out into the backyard and playing, especially on the weekends, and just playing board games.
Oh, nice.
And we've got a couple that we always play. My wife and I like Scrabble and a few other things. But I was just thinking about some of the great board games.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm wondering. I think they're making kind of a comeback.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
There are a lot of bars
that
do nothing but board games. You can walk over to a counter or a shelf,
and I've seen this.
Dozens.
And I've seen like the giant version of Jenga. That people are playing outside. Yeah, they play it like outside or in bars. It's like the pieces are huge. You can stand right next to this tower.
Wow.
And so maybe Jessica, since she's about 40 years younger than we are, she might actually be able to. Do you play any board games, Jessica, at all? Or no? She goes, what's a board game?
Board games.
Well,
actually, yeah. my new position. I play a lot of board games. I play a lot of puzzles.
Oh, there you go.
That counts.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll be able to give us a little insight as to some of the newer ones. But Roger, I mean, we grew up playing board games.
Sure.
So I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about those and get if anybody has some either memories of your favorite board games when you're growing up, or if there's some noob games that you've discovered or that you play, I'd love to hear them because I always love playing these games, and I'd love to get some recommendations as some maybe new games out there that I'm not aware of.
So you need to improve from just the chess on your phone?
Right. No, it's not chess. It's bowling.
On your phone?
Bowling.
I have bowling and Tetris on my flip phone. I don't want to brag or anything. And even that's too much. And just, hey, Roger, guess what? On my flip phone, I found out the other day.
Oh, no.
There's a light on it.
What do you mean, like a backlight?
Like a flashlight.
Oh, my gosh, no.
I didn't even know.
Well, now when you get home late, you know, early in the morning, the sun's not out yet. I mean, you can see where you're going.
No, you know, this flip phone now, it's overwhelming me. I'm overwhelmed.
I had Tetris and I had chess. I'm okay with that.
No, Tetris Light and up. Bowling.
Oh, bowling.
Bowling, not chess. There wouldn't be. The screen on my phone can't hold all the pieces.
You would get carpal tunnel hitting the button so
much.
Well,
no, the little screen wouldn't hold all the pieces. Like, where's my rook? Where's my knight? It's off the screen.
Your knight's over by your rook.
Yeah, it's off the screen. All you see are your bishop, your few pawns.
Yeah, that's it.
And a king and a queen.
And you don't even see the other side of the board.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy. Anyway, I will tell you what's going on, but we'll take a quick break here. I am Jim Toronto, filling in for Matt Bubala. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto, filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Right now it is 1:31, and here's the news with Roger Badish. I love the spinners.
Been down too long, right, wrong, you just can't stop it. Spending all day thinking just of you.
Here's the best part now. Here it comes.
Alright.
12:45.
Headed for the subway home.
Oh, I took my time.
'Cause I felt so all alone.
Not far away.
I heard a funny sound. I took a look around and then I
still see her face.
Smile as she came to calling out my name, and so I
nowhere to go.
Oh, I love the Spinners. Games people play.
Yeah, great song.
Oh. Love, love, love.
I think I wore out their greatest hits CD.
Yeah, love, 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 the 70s Philly soul sound, which was the OJs and the Spinners and the Four Tops, Backstabbers.
Mm.
Oh, such great songs.
Rubber Band Man.
Rubber Band Man. Now get down.
Yeah.
But I love that.
12:45.
Heading home for Subway home.
Oh, I took my time.
'Cause I felt so all alone.
All right, sign him up.
Not far away.
Where's Arista Records when you need them?
Heard a funny sound. I took a look around and then I
still had 2 days.
I don't think he's grovelly like that. Jeez, it's not That's not that.
Hey. Oh, you can't even do Bill Cosby impersonations anymore?
No.
Oh. Sorry.
Okay, Fat Albert.
Hey, be Mamby. Well, you be you be doobin.
No. Let's not go there.
But anyway, I played games people play because, as I said, I would love to get, Roger, some of your inputs. Jessica's here. And you out there, 312-981-7200. What board games, B-O-A-R-D? Right now, I could tell by the amount of phone calls, there's a board, B-O-R-E-D, game going on in this radio station.
No.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. No. Every so often, once again, Roger, according to the handbook that I've got here, radio show handbook.
What does it say?
Self-deprecating humor. Always use self-deprecating
humor. Got it. Let me mark that down.
Yeah, in order to create a bond with your audience so that they don't feel that you think you're better than them, even though, of course, you know that you are.
What? Let me come in there and smack you.
But anyway, so,
yes.
As I said, the weather has been so nice, and so my wife and I have been going out in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little patio out there, and we just play board games.
Yeah.
And we play a couple
traditional
two or three
ones?
Traditional ones, okay. Mostly Scrabble. We like, okay, Scrabble. But I just, it got me to thinking, and mm-hmm, what really tipped me on this, and I thought it would be fun to just get people's picks, people's minds.
Yeah.
Then I started thinking about my favorite board games. I was really young, as a little kid,
mm-hmm,
like a little kid.
Right.
And one of my favorite games, and now we're not, we're around the same age, but we're not the same age.
No, I'm so older. I don't know if I'm older, you're younger.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if this was a little too past your time. But if there's anyone out there listening to the radio right now, if you, mm-hmm, remember this game, I beg you to call me at 312-981-7200. There was this game called Witch. Okay?
I've heard of that.
Yes. Witch.
I didn't
Witch.
Play it, but I heard,
yeah,
of it.
Witch, yeah. Witch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the coolest game. I don't know if, I mean, at least it was cool when I was a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
Now I remember, I doubt if it might be cool anymore. But I went, the great thing about eBay is you can get just about anything you want. If there is some old something that, mm-hmm, you remember as a kid, you go to eBay, you type it up, and gosh darn it, if someone's not selling it.
Yeah.
And so I think of Witch, and I could close my eyes, and I can see the box, and I could see the board, and I could see all the pieces, and I said, geez, not that I was going to buy it.
Right.
But I'm like, I wonder if it's for sale. Wonder if anybody has an old board game for sale, the Witch game. And oh my gosh, I type in Witch, and the way it's spelled is W-H-I-C-H. And then W-I-T-C-H. So it's a play on words, witch, meaning witch of the witches.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea is you set up this little haunted house on the board. So it's 3D. It stands up. And there are different little, there's a chimney that when you take your turn, you put a marble into the chimney and it can go. The marble can go in any of the four rooms that are set up, and if it hits your player, then you have to go back. So there's, like, for instance, there's a stairway, right?
Okay, yeah.
And
you
put the marble in, and if the marble rolls down the stairway that you're on, and knocks your player down, you have to go back to the beginning.
All right.
Or there's a broom. And if the marble hits this thing, the broom sort of swings, and if it knocks your player down, you got to go back
to the
front.
That's pretty cool.
And it was so cool because, like I said, it was 3D.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just the flat board like most of the games were, with the pieces and the dice.
And you went around the board.
Yeah,
and that was
three. You set this up.
Yeah.
And you set up these little.
Well, it's kind of like Mousetrap.
Exactly. It's sort of a takeoff on that.
Yeah. Okay.
And
all
so,
right.
Witch. If anybody remembers Witch, I would love to bond with you. On Witch.
Really,
but anyway,
cool.
It got me to thinking about some of these great games. And now, do you remember any of when you were growing up that you played?
Yeah, I mean, I played both board games and card games.
Oh, okay.
One of my favorite card games was actually by a French name. It was Mielborn, and it was a road race with cards. So you would earn points or mileage and stuff like that. So that I had fun playing that. I played obviously the traditional games, chess, checkers, Chinese checkers.
I used to like Chinese checkers.
Yeah. And then you always get upset because there would always be like one marble missing. It's and would just make your whole day horrible.
And the worst thing about Chinese checkers, you'd play a game and 15 minutes later you'd want to play again.
Well, right.
No, do you get the joke there?
Yeah.
Like Chinese food.
Yeah. Okay.
Come on.
So
Roger.
Then I played.
Come on, stay with me, Roger. Stay with me.
Monopoly.
Oh, of course, that's a classic.
Yeah. And now, as I got older, I played two of the games that my wife and I love to play, the board games.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them were Rail Baron.
Wow.
Which was basically railroads battling for territory.
Oh, my gosh.
To take over different rail lines.
What kind of games are you playing here, Roger?
It was very good. And then we played 221B Baker Street.
I can't believe you just mentioned 221B.
No way.
I have that game.
I have the original version.
So do I. In the little square box with the drawing of what's his name on the cover?
Right. Sherlock Holmes.
Can I just say one word?
What?
Apothecary.
Apothecary. I love Apothecary. Now, are you sitting down? Because I'm going to amaze you.
What's that?
Okay. So, I used to teach British literature in high school. And I would love coming to the part where I would teach about Sherlock Holmes and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle as part of the overall pantheon of British literature.
Of course.
And yeah, I love teaching because it got my students thinking about deductive reasoning and stuff like that. It helped them with their ability to deal with their classwork and their assignments and stuff. So after I covered the whole history of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and we covered a couple of stories, and we analyzed it and everything, I took that game and made it live.
Well, that's what's so great. Now, we should mention, because this is kind of an obscure game.
Well,
but it's
hold
called,
on. Yeah. Wait a minute now.
Okay.
I didn't sit them down and play the board game.
Right. You made them stand up and play the game.
No.
No.
Well, I mean, throughout the school.
Right. So you went to every
room. The apothecary was someone's office.
Right. I get what you're saying.
And they would have
you'd
a key
get clues, right.
and a badge.
Right.
They could lock the room.
Right.
I had to type out hundreds.
Right.
Hundreds and hundreds, because I didn't want to have each one to have the same crime.
Right.
So I broke them up into groups and gave them each their own crime. I had to have their own locations. And this was amazing. I did it at Chicago Vocational when I taught there. And somebody that I taught with there then taught with me at Clemente High School and wanted me to do it with the entire junior class.
Wow. Well, I should mention, so the game 221B yes. Baker Street refers to Sherlock Holmes because that's where that was his apartment number,
right.
221B Baker Street.
Which, did you know?
What?
Did not actually exist.
Yes.
And now it has officially been declared
been
by
there.
Parliament.
I've been
I know.
There. I've been there. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Great stuff.
And so what's cool about it, so it's almost like the great game Clue.
Yes.
Which is
without
very
the goofy characters.
Yeah, which yeah, without Professor Mustard or Colonel Mustard and Professor Plum.
Yes.
And Mr. Green. I hated Mr. Green. He had the worst
Why?
Name of all of them.
It was just plain old
Yeah, just Mr. Green.
Mr. Green.
There was
yeah.
Colonel Mustard, which is the coolest one.
Well, because he was yellow
yeah,
and you
right,
know,
but I mean but,
right.
that, but Professor Plum, but then there was Mr. Green.
Yeah, right.
I mean Professor Plum sounded cool, Colonel Mustard sounded cool,
yeah,
and then Mr. Right. Green
yeah.
was boring. But anyway. So what's great about 221B is that you have you read a case.
Right.
And it's just like Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. and then you go around the board and the board is different areas throughout London.
Right.
And you can go in and then you get a clue, and if it's a and then you go in this other book to find the clue.
Yeah, that's the confusing part.
Yeah, and then you have to, so you write down all the clues
right.
based on the information you were given on the case, and then if there's a good clue, you or maybe there isn't a good clue.
Right.
You can lock that room that you were in and make it sound like, well, there's a good clue. I don't want anyone else to have
right,
that clue.
Right, right.
But it could be a stupid clue.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be mixing. And then the whole idea is to get to all the different rooms, all the different places in London, in Whitechapel or wherever,
mm-hmm.
And then solve the crime. You get to a certain point, you say, I'm ready to solve the crime.
Right. And it wasn't just the crime. You had to solve who did it?
Oh, yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
How they did it.
Right.
And why.
And why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't take 10 minutes.
No, this thing takes forever.
Yeah, but it's a great game.
Yes.
And my friend Tony is a huge, huge Sherlock Holmes fan, and he turned us onto this. And we
oh,
used to
great.
Play 221B all the time. And then we bought one on ourselves, and we've always played it. But I can't believe it. Yeah. In fact, like I said, on my list here,
it's 220. You're kidding.
I've got it written down here.
Oh my
221B.
Gosh. We have been playing it for about three decades.
I can't believe you
yeah.
said that. Yeah, because
yeah.
it's kind of an obscure game.
Very obscure.
But it is so fun. And I mentioned the word apothecary because you go to these different places.
Right. Waterfront,
yeah,
the church.
Yeah, the church.
The police station.
But I remember
yeah.
25 years ago when I first played this, I'm an apothecary. What the hell is an apothecary? And then I found out it's a drugstore.
Right.
And the best part is I've gone to London several times, and they still have apothecaries
yes.
there. And I'm like, oh, there's the apothecary.
Would
I know
you go
what
in
that
for
means.
A clue?
I know. Yeah. No, I would put a, I put a
you
lock there.
It.
I locked it so no one could get the clue. But yeah, so I can't believe you said that. That is
yeah.
so awesome. And I was just getting a list here. In fact, I'm looking at some of the...
Some of the
some people are texting in
yeah.
here. Now, some people mentioned one that I did remember. 221B Baker Street. Somebody says it started in 1977, the game
yeah.
started. Yeah. So it is that old.
It's very old, yeah.
Someone else put a barrel of monkeys. Remember barrel
yeah,
of monkeys?
Yeah, which was kind of weird because it wasn't really there was no board, was there?
Well, no, that was a little barrel, literally a barrel of monkeys, and then you dumped them out, and they had their arms were like hinged, and you would connect them, and if you could make a long
string without them dropping off,
then you won. It wasn't the greatest game, but it was kind of cool because you got this nice little barrel of monkeys.
Yeah,
but my same friend Tony that turned us on to 221B also turned us on, which I never played this in my life until say 10 or 15 years ago, was dominoes.
You've never played dominoes?
I never played dominoes. And then there's this version that we play called the train dominoes.
That I've never heard.
Where you have to make this long train, and you actually use a little train.
Oh, really?
It comes with a train that's like a locomotive, and you put it on the dominoes as you're making this train.
And it moves.
And it just goes, hoo, hoo. It's pretty cool.
I could just see you.
Oh,
honey,
yeah,
I don't want to play dominoes. I just want to listen to the train.
I just want the train. Oh, definitely. That's what got my attention. Hey, if there's a shiny object, I run right toward it. But so I started to go, and I went online to just jog my memory. Because I used to have, I mean, this is once again, you know, I'm probably dating ourselves. But
that's all right.
But it's so, I mean, nowadays, you know, everything is virtual. Everybody has everything at their, but when you were a little kid, 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you had, this is what you did. And everybody had at least 7 or 8 board games. You're in your closet somewhere. When you went to somebody's house, it wasn't just you had one game, you had several games. I mean, I went online, I found some of these great ones that I remember growing up with. See if these rattle you know, any of your, well, obviously, in the 80s, remember, Pictionary was very big.
Right.
Clue, which we talked about.
That was a great old game.
Remember Kerplunk?
I remember the commercial.
Yes, Kerplunk
but
was...
But I don't remember the
Kerplunk
game.
Kerplunk was a long, like, cylinder, and there was a bunch of, like the little pickup sticks.
Right. You would have to pull them out.
And you stuck them all in, and then you dropped, you dropped...
the marbles?
Marbles in there, and then you started to pull those sticks out. And then you kept pulling sticks out, so hopefully the marbles wouldn't fall.
Right.
And then if you pulled the stick where the marbles fell, then you lost.
Right.
Because they went kerplunk.
Right.
When they fell down. Now, remember, don't spill the beans?
I remember the game, but
once
the commercial again but
yeah,
not the,
it was so cool. It was like a barrel of beans, and it would tip.
Right. And would you have to add a bean?
Yes,
you kept adding a bean, right?
And if you added the bean that made the thing tip, then you lost.
All right, let me give you a couple, two that just came to mind.
All right.
One, I played in college. These, instead of studying,
which explains a lot, Roger.
Thank you. Instead of studying for finals, we would spend hours playing Risk.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The game of world domination.
Yeah. Risk.
Right. And the other game that I played, my friend Alan Mooney, who had a closet full of comic books, that if we knew then what we know now, we'd be rich men, also had games, board games, and I love going over there, and he introduced me to the board game Life.
Oh, the game of Life.
And I still want to play it today. I love the game with the little cars and the little stick people. Great game.
You can learn about life when you play the game of life. Yeah, well, there was Life. There was Mystery Date. Remember Mystery Date?
Yeah, I do remember that.
And then there was there was Trouble. Remember with the Pop-O-Matic?
Yeah, the Pop-O-Matic. You had, and it took forever trying to press the darn thing down to make the dice.
The Pop-O-Matic, instead of you rolling the dice, there was this little white dome with a dice underneath it and a piece of metal.
Yeah.
And you press down on the dome and the metal... would move, and that would roll the dice for you.
It would flip it.
It would flip it.
It was like suction
on
it, and you could never press it hard enough to make the dice move
Pop-O-Matic.
More than one space.
There was Trouble and Headache that used Pop-O-Matic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there was, what's the other one here?
What else you got there?
What's that?
Jess, go ahead.
Jess, always talking in my ear. Talk in the ear. What?
She likes Trouble.
I love Trouble.
Trouble. Did you guys play Trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I still do.
With the Pop-O-Matic.
Yeah, I still got
one.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was an awesome game. Then there was Don't Break the Ice. Remember Don't Break the Ice?
Yes.
This was like a little thing, and it had looked like it was all plastic white squares, looked like ice cubes, and you put it down, you put a little guy on a chair, and then they gave you a little hammer.
Yeah.
And you had to hit out the ice cubes. And if you hit the ice cube out, that made all the ice fall, and the little man fall out of his chair, and
you
then
lose.
You lost.
Right.
Yeah, they were.
How about Operation?
Operation,
oh,
which is obviously...
I bought it for my grandkids. They love
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, that means it's a classic. Hungry Hippos. Remember Hungry
They've
Hippos?
They've got that one, too.
Yeah, so that's still around.
Hungry,
cool.
Hungry Hippos.
Candyland.
Yeah.
Mousetrap, you mentioned, where you made this crazy kind of thing where the marble would have to keep moving around.
Right.
Which was always
and
great.
And it would drop a trap over the mouse.
One of my favorites was Electric Battleship. Did you ever play Electric Battleship?
No, I played regular Battleship.
Oh, what was great about Electric Battleship, this came out like in the late 70s, early 80s, was, so you always go, you know, B7.
Right.
And you say hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say it out loud.
Right.
But with Electric Battleship, you would press.
It would make the little noise.
You would press the number, and then you would hear the missile, and it would go, and then if it was a miss, would just hear, and that was
no
it.
Explosion.
So you missed.
Okay.
But then if you got a hit, it would go.
You sunk my battleship.
So cool.
Yeah.
Battleship. Love that. What else?
Chutes and Ladder.
Obviously, yeah. What did we have? Oh, then here was a cool one. Did you remember Stratego?
Yes. I never got into that.
Yeah, but that was kind of like.
It looked interesting.
Yeah. Now, another cool one was Spudzy. You might not remember this.
No,
it was so funny. It was like Hot Potato. Remember Hot Potato?
Yeah.
Where it was almost like musical chairs, where you'd have a potato.
Yeah, had to pass around. There was a timer thing on it.
And then,
you had to keep passing it around until it buzzed.
Yeah. So Spudzy was this red potato, and you twisted it, and it would tick.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd keep passing the thing around, and then if you had it in your hand.
Then you lose.
So it was like Hot
right.
Potato.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the stalwarts, your Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this other cool one that I had because my mom loved Dark Shadows. Remember the show Dark Shadows?
Yeah.
And there was this Barnabas Collins game because he was the main vampire on this soap opera that was called Dark Shadows. And so this cool game was there was a coffin. And you would pick different parts and try to create a skeleton.
Oh.
And the first person to create their whole skeleton won. And if you won, they gave you a pair of fangs. And you got to wear the fangs because you were Barnabas Collins.
Oh, my God.
But now I was thinking about this. Think about in today's world with all this Purell.
Uh-huh.
Purell.
Yeah.
So there was a set of fake fangs, right, in this
one
game.
One set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time you played, you just passed your germs to the next kid. There's no way the Barnabas Collins game could ever survive.
And, of course, when you would be done playing the game, you would just stick the teeth right back in there without cleaning them.
Oh, there's no cleaning? And then you picked them up the next time and someone else put them in their mouth? Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine that game being sold today. But it was so cool because the skeleton parts all glowed in the dark. So as you put it together, you played in the dark, sort of, so that the pieces would glow in the dark. Very cool game. Aside from the unsanitariness of the fangs, it really was a cool game.
Very cool. Okay.
I'm Jim Toronto, filling in for Matt Bubala. We'll talk about this and so much more right after this. No switching. Jim Toronto, filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Phone number is 312-981-7200. After the news, we're going to continue to talk about some of your favorite board games because I'm getting some really cool texts about some games that I had forgotten about. So we'll talk about some of those. And Jessica, I just told you to call Mick and tell him that we would call him at 2:30. But why don't we have Mick ready to go? Because what's that? He said what? You can talk to me on the air once again.
I just called him during that break, and he said 2:30 was fine, but I can call him.
Yeah, call him back in time because I'm sure he might have some cool ideas.
He's up anyway.
Yeah, what the hell's the difference? Come on in, Mick, and get your board games ready. So we're going to talk board games for a while, and after that we're going to talk to Mick in the Pop Culture Club about a few different things, including Mick Jagger just turned 75 yesterday, if you can believe that. So we'll talk about the Rolling Stones. We'll talk about Les Moonves and some interesting stuff going on with him. The head of CBS has been accused of sexual misconduct. That could be very interesting. That and a whole lot more in the Pop Culture Club. So that's all after 2 o'clock. We've got lots more planned until 5, so stick with us. But right now, let me tell you this, that the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is about 2:02, and here's the news with Roger Bettish. Yes, there are games people play in the middle of the night, so what better time to talk about it than in the middle of the night, or I guess early morning. Whatever the case may be. Jim Tirano filling in for Matt Bubawa this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. And we are talking about some games people play, specifically board games that people play. And Roger Bettish and I have been sharing some of our... I still can't believe that we bonded on 221B Baker Street. That is
amazing.
One of the more obscure games. But folks, if you like board games and you like mystery games, it's look for it. I'm sure you can buy it online or somewhere else, but
you can buy extension packs. They have additional packets of new mysteries.
Now
you don't just go through the bunch you got in the game.
Yeah,
it comes with the game. You can buy additional packets.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a cool game that you get to actually play Sherlock Holmes, be Sherlock Holmes, and solve a mystery. Speaking of mystery, this is no mystery. Mick Kaler, are you on the phone there, sir?
I'm right there, pal.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Have you been hearing and listening to our discussion about board games?
I was told that there was a board game discussion. I'm like, oh, that's right in my wheelhouse. I love those.
Yeah, so what? I was talking about some of the ones that I remember. Do you remember this game? Because you're only a couple years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody texted, but they didn't really get into much, as I'd rather talk about it than just text. Do you remember this game called Witch?
That sounds familiar. My sister might have played that game, but I don't remember
one?
That myself.
I must be the only one. Milton, I would love to have had stock in Milton Bradley.
Oh, yeah, that was like the place to get all those games.
They made all those games. So what was your favorite game growing up, or favorite games, board games?
It began and ended with Stratego.
Oh, really?
Oh, Roger. Are you kidding?
Roger
was
just...
My neighbor Pete and I, we would play, before Wiffle games, every day in the summer, we'd sit on his porch or his back picnic table and play Stratego. We loved that game.
So what was, because I remember the commercial, Stratego!
Yeah.
Stratego. But what was Stratego?
It was basically a military game, and you had pieces, the same pieces on each side, kind of like chess or checkers, and they were numbered 1 through 9, and then there were also bombs. The number 1 was your marshal. That was like your most powerful character or piece, and you tried to capture the other side's flag.
Oh, I get it. So it was almost like kind of like Risk, too, right? Wasn't that kind of a game of world domination, too?
Yeah, it was like that, except Risk was a bit more complex. This was more like checkers as opposed to Risk was almost more like chess.
Yeah.
And you would move your pieces on a square grid, and you would say, like, let's say my 1 went up against your 8. You don't know that I have my 1, and my 1 would beat your 8, and then I would move forward.
I get it.
Yeah,
like I said,
the 8, by the way, was the only thing that could get rid of bombs, because your 8 was your minor. And if you knocked a bomb out, you might have had your flag surrounded by bombs. And if the 8 kept knocking through the bombs, it could get to your flag. Once he gets your flag, you win.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well,
the other one, of course, was Monopoly. We love Monopoly, too.
Yeah. And like I said, this whole topic came up because I was talking about my wife and I, with the weather's been nice, we've been going outside and on the patio and just playing board games. And we like to play Scrabble and a couple other things. And I was thinking, wow, remember some of these board games that we used to play? Because that was what you did when you were a little kid. I mean, when we went to somebody's house, you played games. There wasn't any YouTube. There wasn't any smartphone. There wasn't any, MTV, whatever. You played board games.
Yeah, there was those. Remember Parcheesi?
Parcheesi? I was just looking on, a lot of people have been texting, and thank you for staying up and participating. I had a list, but here were some that were not on my list.
Okay.
I forgot about this one, which I did have. Do you remember Snap Bowling?
Oh, yeah.
It was a mini bowling lane.
Right. Yeah, like a long, narrow thing, a plastic lane, and you shot with that. Yeah.
And the pins had magnets, and you set them up on the and they had a little magnet where you would set them up in the little triangle, and then where the ball was, there was another ball with two kind of pieces of elastic, and you brought that one ball back, and then that one ball hit the bowling ball. And that's how it went down the lane.
Right.
And then you bowled. And, oh, my God, the thing was as noisy as hell. But, my gosh, I must have drove my parents crazy because I played that game so much. Then I forgot about this one. Remember Ants in the Pants?
I was going to bring up, okay, as long as you're going to say Ants in the Pants, don't break the ice.
Yeah, we mentioned Don't Break the Ice with the little guy on the chair.
Don't Break the Ice. Do you remember Sure Shot?
No. What was Sure Shot?
Sure Shot was a long, narrow board, like a hockey rink, and each side had a fixed, like a little gun that shot marbles.
Oh.
And you had to shoot. Remember table hockey?
Yeah,
pucks?
Yeah, yeah, which I loved. Oh, my God,
yeah,
the tabletop hockey.
You had to hit the marbles to hit the puck into the other side's, the other person's goal.
Wow.
So there was Sure Shot, and then one similar to that was called Rebound. Do you remember Rebound?
I do remember Rebound. Yes.
Yeah. And that was the same thing where you were trying to get hit off rubber bands. You were hitting a little puck. And as long as I'm talking about these games, who can forget table hockey? I lived for table hockey.
I had the Bobby Hull.
Oh yeah.
Blackhawks hockey. My team had the Blackhawks against the Canadians. If you remember, everybody, especially young kids, if you loved hockey, there were these tabletop. They're very similar, like the kinds they have in bars now. You know, the bubble hockey.
Yeah, Czechs hockey, they call it now.
Yeah, but these were tabletop. I'd love to get one of these just because, oh, my God, to have one of these would just be, we'll talk about nostalgia. But it was this tabletop thing, and if you remember, like my Bobby Hull hockey, the scoreboard connected on both sides, and then you dropped the puck through the top of the scoreboard, and it fell down.
It was above your little playing field.
Above there, and then you had these levers, and you had your players, your defensemen, and your center, and your wings, and then your goalie with the little net. And when it went in the net, the little thing would pop up, the little color on the back of the net, like to show the light.
Only a little trigger, so the red light would go up.
Yeah. Oh. Bobby Hull hockey.
And my favorite move in table hockey was I would take my wingers and send the puck back to my defenseman at the point.
Right.
And then have my defenseman launch a shot from there. I loved doing that.
And the best was back when I had it, I probably you did too, the players were metal.
Yeah.
So I used to bend their stick.
Oh, yeah, you give a little curve to the stick.
Curve
to
the stick, so some of those shots were flying, man.
Yeah, and I had the original game, and then years later I got the game where, this is back when I think it was six teams per side, I had all the different teams. If you want to be the Kings, I could be the Blackhawks, or I could be the Maple Leafs, and you could be the Red Wings. We had that going, too.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I loved it. Now, we got some phone calls. Excellent. Let me take a few calls here. Let's go to Bob in Round Lake. How you doing, Bob?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good, good.
Listen, I was wondering, do you remember there was four games? One was Dogfight, one was Battle Cry, and then there were two other ones. They were like, they were all the same, I mean, they were all the same, by the same company.
I remember Dogfight.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, yeah. That was
Battle Cry.
I don't remember
Battle
Cry.
And then there was two other ones. They were the same. They were all like from wars, from different types of wars and that.
Right, it was like a historical thing.
Yes, right. And like the Dogfight, me and my brother used to play it all the time. And the Battle Cry, and the other two I cannot remember, but...
Oh, very cool.
One was, and some of them you didn't even do any dices or anything. You just do the things. Right. I cannot think the other two, but man, but if anybody fight, but me and my brother used to play those.
Oh,
all
I know.
The time.
We used to. Thanks a lot, Bob. We used to play so many of these games. That's all you would do. It was amazing. I got William.
And you know what? You didn't look at the clock. You just kept playing. And if you finish the game, like, okay, let's play another one. Let's move on.
Yeah, and like Bob was saying, you just, for hours and hours, you'd play. Got William from Geneva here. How you doing, William?
William from Geneva. How are you guys?
Good, good, good.
Awesome conversation. Awesome conversation. I grew up in a family with nine kids. We played board games.
You had to have
a
million
right?
games.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. First of all, you mentioned Mealborns. Mealborns was our camping game. When we all went camping, we played Mealborns at the table all night long.
Wow.
And remember a game called Pit?
Pit?
Yeah. K-I-T, right?
P-I-T. It was a stock trading game. It was like wheat, oats, barley, and it was like you had to get a whole hand of them, you know. Like, and
you had to corner the market. You called it cornering the market, right?
Right, and you cornered the market. Exactly. Okay, here's the one game
that
you haven't
sounds
made.
Like a very interesting game. It had pork bellies and wheat. Where do you think I learned all my stuff?
Do you remember? This came out in the 70s. Monday Night Football.
Electric
arena.
Yeah, electric football. I talked about that a couple weeks
ago. Not electric football.
No, this was different. This was with the lighted field, right? The grid.
And you had defense and offense. And the defense had a card, and they lined it up where that what kind of defense they were going to play. And the offense said what they're going to play, right?
Yeah.
And the defense, I'm going to blitz. And the offense goes, oh. Offense is going to call something like a, you know, down the field thing, and it would line up on the, it would light up, you know, what you got. It was so awesome. Oh my God.
One of my brothers did though,
took a pencil and like poked every freaking square out of the game.
That's too funny.
He ruined it.
Oh, that's too funny.
And Risk. Risk is the most awesome game. And I have one problem with the rules in Risk, but it is in the official rules that you can make alliances. I abhor alliances in Risk. I abhor that. You should not make alliances.
Wow.
Yeah, you never know who's going to like mess you over by joining up with somebody else.
Wow. Who knew there was controversy in Risk?
Oh, sure. Not so much when I was younger, but I had friends in college. I mean, they would literally play all night doing that game.
Oh, Risk is an awesome game. Awesome game.
That's too funny. Thanks a lot,
Listen,
William.
Guys, I appreciate it. Thanks for that. Thanks for talking.
Thank you. Hey, we got Kurt here. Kurt from Schaumburg. How you doing, Kurt?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, good.
Great topic. Yeah, great topic. I love, late night, perfect. Playing board games, I would grow up like everyone else saying on the phone calls. Had my brothers, we always play games. A couple games, which I don't know if been mentioned yet or not. Othello, did you ever play that one?
Oh, yes.
I remember that.
Yes, it was with the black and white chips, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you'd kind of put them in front of each other, and you'd trap the other guy, you would flip it over, you'd be black or white. Another one, do you remember Mastermind, where you had the different color pegs?
Yes, I do remember Mastermind, yes.
And you had a row of 20 different guesses to make, and as you did, then the other person would have to use like a white or a black little marker. If you got it black, you knew you had the right color in the right space. If you had it white, then it was the right color but wrong space. So that was always fun to play.
Right.
People keep talking about Risk, right? How about Axis and Allies?
Oh, wow.
I
never heard of that one.
No,
never
played.
Was that the same kind of concept?
It was very similar to Risk, where you had to capture territories, but it was all based on World War II in across the world, literally. Like, you could be Japan, you could be Russia, you could be Germany, you could be the U.S., you could be Great Britain. Pretty much, if you're Great Britain, you lost, because it was very historically accurate, but it was a lot of fun.
Especially if you were Neville Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got wet on all the time, yeah.
If you're a Rommel, you're great.
Right. Well, isn't it funny? Now, think about it. These are all games from, like, the 60s and 70s. And look at how we're talking. They're all based on war.
Right.
Kind of themes. You don't
and
see.
Dominations. Yeah,
you don't really see war domination games anymore. But back then, it was still, that was still a hot topic. And that's what we played Cowboys and Indians. We played war. Yeah. I mean, that's what we did, you know.
Great.
That's
stuff.
Too funny.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kurt. Did you ever play?
You're very welcome, guys.
What about? Thanks a lot, pal. What about? Where are we at here? I'm going to get him off. Remember, are you still there, Kurt?
I'm still here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Remember Yahtzee? We forgot about Yahtzee.
Yeah, of course, playing Yahtzee. Yeah, I still play Yahtzee.
Yeah, I mean, I remember
X amount of a kind, and the little charts you played with. Yeah,
and then there was the other one.
Yeah.
Do you remember the one called Stay Alive? It had
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember Stay Alive.
Stay Alive had a bunch of marbles and a bunch of levers.
That was Survivor. I thought it was called Last Survivor.
No, Kerplunk was with the stick.
With the marbles.
with the marbles and the sticks.
The marbles, right, but you'd pull a lever, and if you got it just right, the marbles would fall in. I was thinking of that game. Is that what it's called?
It was called Stay Alive. Yeah, Stay Alive. And then, then there was Ants in the Pants. We didn't really talk about Ants in the Pants.
They had that, too.
Yeah.
Ants in the Pants was cool
Gooey
because...
Louie. Ever hear Gooey Louie? I mean, you're talking about, like, Don't Break the Ice. Gooey Louie was it was a weird game. I hated this thing, but my friends loved it. Literally, you would pick some, like, fake head nose with these, like, gummy worm kind of looking things, and if you got the wrong one, the brain would pop out. The weirdest game I ever saw.
Have an aneurysm.
It's a real thing. You can look it up on the web. It's called Gooey Louie. Oh, it's weird
That's
stuff.
That's too funny. We forgot about... we forgot about...
Sequence?
Now, Sequence is a game that I just discovered, and my wife and I just, we played it by someone's house a few months ago, and we actually went out and bought it. I like Sequence, but we forgot about Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Sure, my cousin had Rock'em Sock'em Robots. We played it all the time.
Yeah.
I love that. I still do the fake punches like they do, you know, with my kids. It's great.
And
Ants
in the Pants was so cool because, if you remember, so they gave you this pair of pants, this plastic pair of pants with suspenders.
Right.
And then these ants were kind of like you pressed them and they jumped.
The
goal was to get the ants into the pants.
You know, another one when you're talking about the Rock'em Sock'em Robots, do you remember Battling Tops?
Oh, I loved Battling Tops.
Yeah.
Oh, I love because it was like there was like four little stations. It was a round arena.
Yeah, pull a string with a spinner.
Yeah, you had a spinner. And the best part about spinning Battling Tops was every top. Because then it would spin it, and they would hit each other, and with the first one to go down, the one that would stand after they were spinning was the winner. But the coolest part was, if you remember, there were different names for each top.
Right, different little clever things.
Yeah, you put a little sticker on there, and you had, my gosh, this is too fun.
How about Don't Spill the Beans?
I mentioned.
Another one kind of like in the same order of Ants in the Pants.
Don't Spill the Beans. It was kind of a tilting pot of beans, and every time you put a bean in, if they spilled out when you put the bean on, you lost. Look, Kurt, I appreciate it. I got to run here. Guys. Take care.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the topic. Good call.
All right. Bye-bye. Could you... Because Kurt there? Now he's gone. Oh,
how about Yahtzee?
We just mentioned Yahtzee.
Yeah.
I love Yahtzee. Tell me, how hard was it to get a large straight?
It was very hard.
Exactly. That was like having a royal flush.
Yeah, always put zero in on the large straight.
You know, one other one that when you were talking about the war stuff, when you talk about politics, do you remember Landslide?
No, but I should say, because now Roger's back. Roger, Mick loves Stratego.
Oh. Ooh, we got to get a game night together here, guys. You know, wow.
Let me take a quick break. I think we got to keep talking about this. This is too fun. Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala here at WGN 720 AM. It's about 2:27. Take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. Be here till 5 AM. We've been talking about board games before we. We go to the news. I just wanted to mention a few more that people have been sending in that we have not mentioned, which I can't believe. Sorry.
Yeah,
Sorry, a classic one. Mm-hmm. Concentration was another one. We mentioned Yahtzee here. Perfection was another one that I... Perfection was a good one. It was a memory game.
Okay.
And Boulder Dash, I remember that one. Boulder Dash. As I said, I had Snap Bowling. What else do we have here? Rock'em Sock'ems. I think we touched on all of them. And Mousetrap, once again, I used to love Mousetrap. Oh, my gosh. I had so many of these games, and then, you know, you just get older, and your mom throws them out.
You got older, and you started directing your attentions elsewhere, and then your mom says, these games are gathering dust. They're in the way. I'm getting rid of them. And then before you know it,
they're gone.
And then you go, like 2 years later, you go back and you open the closet door and said,
where's my games?
Exactly.
And I had a stack of them.
Yeah.
Everybody did, because, like I said, when you went over, that's what we did. We played games, and here we are still playing games.
Now, if you want to go play one of those board games, you got to go to a bar.
Or you got to go to eBay and spend $150.
Now, here's the cool thing, though. If you go to, and I know Toys R Us is now gone, But if you go to like Target or some of these other what we used to call department stores,
right?
And you go to the toy section, many of these board games
still there.
Are on sale, for like $2 a piece
because you know no one's playing them. Yeah. But gosh, they were so. And the thing is, they were fun. They took time, but. And they were simple, you know.
Yeah.
It was just easy fun. It wasn't, you know, you weren't taxing yourself, and yet it was fun. It was communal. You were going against one another. It was just really good time. Yeah. So, boy, I miss my board games. As I said, my wife and I still play some, but I was this other game, Sequence, is one that we just discovered. But hopefully, we'll go to the store and try to find some more.
Sure.
But that was kind of fun reminiscing. I'm going to go to Roger, but after this, I'm just going to tell you we're going to go to talk to Mick Kaler a little more. Mm-hmm. About the Rolling Stones. In fact, I just looked on the line here. I've got a friend of mine who is a huge... You talk about me being an Elton John fan.
Right.
This guy travels around the world. I want to hear how many times he's seen the Rolling Stones. Ooh. Because yesterday was Mick Jagger's 75th birthday.
Wow.
The guy still weighs 120 pounds.
Dripping wet.
Friggin' believable. But right now, it's about 2:33, and here's the news with Roger Badish. Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Matt Bubala. Be here till 5 a.m. Hope you've enjoyed the show up to this point. I certainly have, having a ball up to this point, talking about some of the favorite board games that we either grew up with or playing today. And before we leave that topic, I just want to mention a couple more. Kathleen texted in and said, well, hey, guys, this male bonding thing is fun, but don't forget some of the women out here, we played Mystery Date. And I remember that commercial. Are you ready for your mystery date? And there was like this picture of some guy in the little door. Oh, that was so funny.
And wasn't Mystery Date the subject of a movie?
Was it?
I think it might have been.
Really?
If I'm not mistaken, I can't remember the movie right now. It's an older movie. But the main characters and the main theme of it kind of revolved around their love of that game and how they wish they had their mystery date.
Oh, how funny. I don't remember that. And then, of course, we forgot Twister.
Oh, well, that was a big board.
Yeah. And then we forgot, I had it written down. There was Twister and Mystery Date. Oh, Candyland.
Oh, we said that a long time ago, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I mention Candyland?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my gosh, as I said, that Milton Bradley Company, my gosh, they must have just cleaned up in the 70s.
And they tried to go digital after a while.
Yeah,
they tried to do the handheld games.
Not the same. Not the same. I remember the big electronic technology game that set the world aflutter was, is Mick, are you on there, Mick, or no?
Yeah, he's
there. Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Simon. You remember Simon?
Oh, yeah. It was four colors, right?
Yeah.
And with you had the sounds.
And it was like a memory game.
With a sequence and the sounds, and you had it first gave you the sequence of the sounds, which is the four little colors. It was a round disc with four colored different little buttons or segments, and then it made a sound, and then it gave you the segment or the sequence, then you had to copy the sequence.
But it would start out with one.
Right.
And then two.
It would grow.
And then three.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if you didn't get the right one.
Yeah, but that was...
We used to play that in college, but we used to involve alcohol.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, most of these games, we're talking about all these board games. At the end of the day, they all got transformed into drink. I mean, look what happened to ping pong.
Right, yeah.
I mean, ping pong is a drinking game now.
Right, or the beer pong.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean...
Well, for that one, going back to Risk... some of our marathon sessions were because of drinking and other things in college.
And weren't they always, Mick, weren't they always during finals?
Yeah, right. When you should be studying.
Exactly. You need a break. And so you take like half the night to play.
Exactly. You know, someone would be like passed out on one side of the board, you know, because they've been playing for 5 hours.
And think about, I just thought about this too. Think about the companies that used to make dice.
Oh, sure.
They're out of business now.
Yeah.
Nobody uses it, unless you're in Vegas. Nobody's using dice at home before. I mean, how many? That's the best part. Think about how many times we had all these board games,
and we never could find a pair of dice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who lost them? What's going on? Where the board?
Yeah. You could never. Yeah. Half the time we would get together to play our games, and we couldn't because we don't. Where's the dice? The dice is gone.
And if only we knew back then as kids how to fix dice.
Right. Exactly.
And you would always bring your own set just in case.
Oh my God! And then I was watching that. You ever see that? That porn, not porn, pawn,
what?
Pawn Stars. You know where they...
Oh, yeah, Pawn Stars, the show, Pawn
yeah.
Stars.
Yeah, where
yeah.
they go to, they have the pawn shop and the guy brings all the stuff in.
Yeah.
So this is what really got me on this topic to talk about. It was two things. Not only was I playing games, but there was, somebody brought in this Beatles game from 1964. It was a Beatles board game called Flip Your Wig.
Oh my God!
I remember hearing that. I remember that name. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was an officially sanctioned board game. It was on the Brian Epstein. You know, he was the manager of the Beatles, and it was his company that made this game. So it was officially, sanctioned by the Beatles, and it had, their picture on it, of course, and then each little piece was the Beatles' face. And that was the cool thing about these games too. Like I was talking about with like the Barnabas Collins one. The games themselves, the pieces were cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, we all talk about Monopoly, you know, with all those little tokens with the car and the top hat and the thimble.
The iron.
Yeah. I always like the race car.
Yeah, everybody wanted to be that.
Yeah. Although I could go for a thimble. I could be a thimble.
Maybe for Halloween, we should each dress up as our favorite Monopoly
game. Or the horse.
Wait, don't they have new ones now? Didn't they get rid of a couple and put new ones in the last couple of years,
Did they really?
I think they changed a couple pieces.
Didn't they add one?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, actually, the Monopoly, they have one that's a big butt, and you go as a Kardashian.
Wow.
Yeah, but doesn't that kind of tilt the board?
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
It's a little unfair.
What has happened here? My goodness.
We're going to pervert all our childhood games.
I'm trying to be Garrison Keillor over here, and you guys are going right to Rod Jeremy.
We're talking about drinking. We're talking about big butts.
Oh, my gosh. But, there was the there was the wheelbarrow.
Right.
For Monopoly.
Let me look it up. Let me look
thimble,
it up here for you.
Race car. Horse. What else was there?
A new Monopoly
shoe,
piece.
Yeah, talking about the shoe.
Oh, wait a minute.
Shoe. Yes, the shoe. I forgot the shoe.
Sure.
New Monopoly tokens. A rubber ducky.
Oh,
geez. A T-Rex.
What?
Wow. They're getting rid of... Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. This is from a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
Hasbro.
Right.
There's a name for you. The Scotty Dog.
Oh, the dog, right.
Oh, yeah, the little dog. The little metal dog, I remember that.
The little dog, the top hat, the roadster.
The top hat? Yep. They're getting rid of the roadster?
No. Hold on. Yeah. The Scotty dog, top hat, roadster, cat, and battleship tokens will return.
Oh, the battleship, right.
But the boot, as this article says, got the boot.
Right.
As did the wheelbarrow and...
What?
The thimble.
Thimble?
Yep.
Oh, God, you have the thimble. Come on.
Gone. Oh. Gone.
Oh.
They will be replaced by a T-Rex, a rubber ducky, and the penguin.
Well, a penguin?
Well, a penguin.
Oh, I'm playing my vintage then. I'm playing my classic.
I'm going old school.
Yeah, I'm going old school. I'm Thimble. I'm Thimble. Give me a break. You don't get rid of Thimble for T-Rex.
All right, so now they did a vote, apparently online. What was the most popular piece?
Race car.
Mick?
I got to go with top hat.
Scotty Dog.
Scotty Dog? I hated Scotty Dog.
Yeah.
I never was Scotty Dog.
Top hat was third. Race car was fourth.
What? Wait. Top hat beat race car?
Yep. The T-Rex came in second.
Everybody wanted race car.
I know. Because you wanted to race around the board.
Even the girls wanted race car.
Sure.
Oh, I don't know who did this voting.
Hey, don't blame me. I'm just reading Hasbro's article.
I am blaming you.
Okay. Join the crowd.
So anyway, we're talking about games here, and one other game, which I can't believe talk about the game of life. I cannot believe, Mick, that Mick Jagger yesterday turned 75.
I know.
I mean, it's unbelievable to think that rock stars are 75 years old. And, I mean, Paul McCartney and Ringo are almost 80.
Yeah.
And, but, wow. I mean, when you see Mick Jagger today, he's still in amazing shape. I mean, let's face it. His face is a little haggard.
Right, a little craggy.
Yeah, his face a little craggy. And he's clearly dyeing his hair. But, I mean, the guy still weighs 120 pounds soaking wet, and he's still moving around. And I want to bring this guy on the phone here, Jim Petrega. Is it Jim? Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
First of all, thank you for staying up, because I know you have to get up early today.
I had to get up.
Well, thank you so much. I had to call Jim because I met Jim. He's a big Elton fan, and we met at a concert one time, and now we see each other at quite a few concerts. But as I got to know him, I went on his Facebook page. I also noticed that you are a huge Rolling Stone fan, to the point of you're almost, I would say you're a bigger Rolling Stones fan than you are an Elton John fan, correct?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, Jim. Sorry.
No problem. But you, but, I mean,
but
how
I
many.
I cover a pretty big gamut.
But how many, I mean, every time I see your Facebook page, you have traveled literally around the world and you go from city to city sometimes throughout Europe. Now, you were just in Europe, weren't you? Just in Prague?
No, I didn't do the Prague one. I did, although I had a ticket. But I did the opening show for this last No Filter tour in Dublin.
Oh, was it
Dublin?
Okay.
I was supposed to go back for Warsaw, which was the last show, but life got in the way there, and I couldn't do that one.
And you even saw Mick Jagger in a car, didn't you?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I'm one of those guys that was standing outside waiting for rehearsal night, and we waited for him on the way in, and then got him on the way out. And it was pretty surprising. I mean, he got to a position where he rolled the window down and had the guy go real slow by. Oh, there's probably 15 of us sitting out there, standing out there in the blowing drizzle and whatever, and for the whole rehearsal while they were rehearsing. And he waved at us both times, which I thought was pretty good, you know.
Oh, that's very cool. And so, so how many times have you seen the Rolling Stones? 88.
So
times.
I'm not in your 100 and what are you, 176.
Yeah, I know, but
right?
You've seen him 88 times. I mean, and you always, yeah. I mean, and Jim takes some incredible pictures because you are usually sitting right toward the front. You've got some really good camera equipment, and you've got some amazing pictures. And I had to laugh because about, what, 6 months ago or maybe earlier this year, wasn't it? There was this Rolling Stones exhibition called Exhibitionism.
Exhibitionism, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was here
at Navy Pier.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Navy Pier. And sure enough, one of your pictures was in the exhibit.
It totally blew me away. I had gotten in with the press for the initial walkthrough. And as you get to the end of Exhibitionism, as it goes from city to city, they put the local pictures there. Of the local concert. So I was for Chicago, I'm walking through there and I'm looking at this and I double take and I triple take and it was one of my photos from Comiskey Park back in 2003.
Wow, very cool. Yeah, very cool.
Totally blew me away.
So have you been a Stones fan for how many years then?
Well, you know, I was a Stones fan as a kid. I had the albums and things, but nothing serious until 1994. So I've done 88 shows since 1994, which is, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there with 300 shows under their belt, but I've done mine just since 1994. So that's, when I was able to have some money and go do some things, and my sisters tried to get me to go in 89 for Steel Wheels, and it just didn't work out up at Alpine. And then, so when 94 came, we better see them before they're done. I said, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
So we went to camp. We went to Camp Randall.
So, what would you say is your favorite period of the Rolling Stones in terms of their music?
Oh, that's a tough call. I mean, obviously, all the Exile on Main Street stuff was spectacular, you know. But I still enjoy the new stuff. You know, they're getting ready to come out with a new album here in the next probably 6-8 months, and I still enjoy listening to the new stuff, just like you like listening to the new Elton stuff, and I do too. I listen to I buy the vinyl, the last one that came out in vinyl, and you don't. But we don't listen to albums the way we used to, you know? You don't sit there and listen to it over and over again where it becomes part of you.
Right.
The kids don't do that. You know, it's one shot at a time, and that's they're really missing something that way, you know?
Well, I think the one thing that, as I said, now you've seen him perform so many times. Are you, you know, as I said, he just turned 75 yesterday. So as you're watching him, are, especially over the last, say, 15 years that you said, or 25 years that you've been going, have you seen him, Mick Jagger? Has he really slowed down?
Or,
Not at all.
I mean,
seems...
if you've seen some of the videos of this tour, I mean, he's still jumping all over.
Yeah,
and,
I mean...
and these were all stadium tours, so he's running from one end to the other constantly. And I don't know how the guy does it. You know,
yeah,
I was showing some videos at work today. There's people, and they just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I give him so much credit because, I mean, that, you know, that's a guy, you know, you can say what you will about Mick Jagger, and there's all these stories about him and everything, but at the end of the day, he really is a pro. And he knows,
by far, yeah.
And he knows that is what, when people come to a Rolling Stones concert, they're expecting to see those Rolling Stones do that, and they're expecting to see him do the chicken walk and the stutter step and all of his moves, and they're expecting him to look like he's always looked, like 110 pounds. And to his credit, he has stayed in amazing shape. And I think one of the reasons that they still remain, one of the biggest draws is not just from the nostalgia part of it, which is obviously at this point, you know, their concerts, as you know, are filled with all of their old songs. But you have to certainly admire the energy and the performance that they're still bringing almost at 80 years old.
Yeah, even Keith Richards, I mean, running from the center of the stage, because they have a little section that comes out so Jagger can be out away from the main stage and do some, like they call it the B stage kind of area or whatever, and Keith will come out and Ronnie will come out and do the same thing, and Keith in Dublin running back from that stage. I mean, it's like, holy cow. I mean, they're just, you know, and they go for the whole 2 hours, you know, and there's no break going on here. I mean, it's very, very exciting. And I just got hooked. You know how you get hooked.
Yeah, no, I mean, now I've seen the Stones. Now, Mick, you're there, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen the Stones about 3 or 4 times, so I'm certainly not in your league. But the cool thing is, though, I have seen them at like different points in their career. And as I said, that's why I asked you. I mean, the first time I saw them was in 81 during the Tattoo U tour when he was wearing the football pants and everything. I saw him at the old Rosemont Horizon. But when I see, and I remember that was a big pay-per-view. That was a huge pay-per-view concert at that time.
Oh, yeah,
too.
The last show of the tour was.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. And then there was that film, Let's Spend the Night Together, which was from that tour.
Right.
But... I watch that, and as I say to Jim, I'm watching them perform today, and yes, I mean, you know, there's a little slowed down, but my gosh, for 75 years old, I mean, at that time, the guy was 30.
Right.
And to see them still make the moves, and I mean, as much as there's always been, you know, a lot of tensions between Jagger and Richards, and they go back, their friendship goes back to, you know, my gosh, when they were teenagers.
They were college, yeah.
Yeah, but
earlier than that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really just been an amazing ride, and certainly the longevity is a part of the reason, but you cannot deny the performance, which is still there, and that's one great thing about all these classic rock people. They really are performers.
And you've seen a lot of my photos where the Mick and Keith are getting together. It seems to be, at least on this last tour, with my photos and other photos, that they are doing the hand bump in the middle, and they are doing the hugging, and they are doing the passing the harmonica from one to another. And that it wasn't always the case, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know.
Right.
But, so they're, I don't know if they're binding toward the end of their touring years. They're a little bit better, but right now they're getting along great. And obviously this is going to continue. Hopefully, we're going to be looking for something back here next year. So
yeah, hopefully. Well, I got to take a quick break here, but Jim, I just want to thank you so much for waking up and sharing some of your your Rolling Stone stuff. 88 shows and more to come, and people. I mean, do you want to give your name out so people can go to your Facebook page and see your pages? Yeah, give the spelling of your
name. Absolutely. It's Patriga. It's P as in Peter, I E T as in Tom, R Y G as in George, A is under Jim.
Yeah, he's got some amazing photos of the Rolling Stones, as well as some other rock people as well, to the many concerts he goes to. So thanks for staying up or waking up, Jim. I really appreciate it.
All right, buddy, we'll get together soon. See
yeah,
you.
We'll see you on the road.
All right, yeah, pretty soon, actually.
Yeah, September. It all starts.
Sounds good. See you in Allentown.
Oh, yeah, you definitely will. September 8th. I've already got my hotel room.
Do you? Oh, boy. I better get on the stick.
Yeah. Take care.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right. We'll take a quick break. He'll be right back. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. We're going to go to the news. After that, we will continue to talk a little bit about the Rolling Stones with Mick Kaler and a couple other pop culture tidbits. And later in the show, I will be playing an interview I did with a woman who passed away this past week, Val Camaletti, who was the owner of Val's Hala Record Store. And if anybody loved music and loved record stores in this city, I hope you got a chance to go to Val's Hala. And I did an interview with her back in April of 2016. So I thought I'd play a little excerpt of that because she really was a special person. And you get a chance to really get a sense of why so many people are making such a big deal about her. Her obituary was written up in the Tribune, the Sun-Times. All the local news did things. She was on Chicago Tonight. And I got a really kick out of this. I saw this on the social media on Facebook today. The Lake Theater in Oak Park, in downtown Oak Park, on their marquee, said, rest in peace, Val Camaletti, you will be missed. So that was a nice gesture. Really an iconic figure, especially in the Oak Park area and the music scene. And I thought we would have fun playing back a little of this interview that I did with her a few years ago. But right now it's about 3:02, and let me tell you this. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is about 3:03, and here's the news with Roger Bennett. Jim Toronto with you here. Filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Been on since 1, going till 5. So we got a couple hours left to go. Phone number is 312-981-7200 if you want to join in on what we're talking about, or if you've got a topic you'd like to jabber about, by all means. 312-981-7200, and that is also the number to text. And thank you so much. A lot of people have been using the text this morning to chime in on the board game discussion that we had. So we had a lot of nice suggestions and nice memories from people. So thank you for texting in. But don't forget about that phone, folks. As I said on the last show, I enjoy talking to people. This is an audio this is an audio medium. So the texts are great. I appreciate the inclusion and the participation. But, you know, you can also jump on the phone because it's an audio thing. And as I said last week, I've got all this stuff planned, but you, the listener, you are my grout. You fill in my cracks, if you will.
You fill in my gaps.
So I need you to I need my grout. So I'm calling my grout to, or pleading with my grout. As I lay this complex tile of a show together, I need my grout to fill in the cracks at 312-981-7200. I had to laugh last week. I off the top of my head, I just thought of this grout concept. And then the producer, Jessica, gets in my ear and she's like, we've got some grout. Someone just called in. We've got grout. And I love that. So you are my grout. So 312-981-7200 if you want to be some grout and fill in my cracks here. On the radio show.
Just remember, Mick, you're a part of this.
Yeah, I'm part of the grout.
Yeah. You're the colored grout.
I like the thing. I'm a Tilex who likes to keep it clean, okay?
There you go. Yeah, right.
No, Mick's more like my caulk.
Your caulk?
Yeah.
Hi-oh!
How about we just call up Matt, and then he can be our grout for the evening.
Well, I mean, wait. If Matt can call in, then Matt could be here. So sorry, Matt.
Oh, by the way, we got a sports update. I totally forgot. Again, Matt's youth baseball team
Oh, is he
one? This is why he's not here. He is in the midst of championship baseball.
Really?
They are in the state championship, and they won their first game yesterday.
Wow!
And they've got an early morning game, so he's probably trying to get some sleep as they continue to advance in the state championship.
And now, what is the what age group?
You know what? I'm not sure. There, he deals with several different age group teams.
Is he the manager?
He's a manager of one of the teams, and I'm not sure which one. But I think it is the one that his kids are on.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, so it's they're in the championship, state championship for that age group, I guess.
Yeah.
And they won their first game yesterday, he says, and they're getting ready for an early morning game to continue on today.
Nice.
So,
cool. Good luck.
You know what happens when they win like that? Coach has got to take him to Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or Shakey's.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's get pizza. That pizza. We always wanted to go to
Shakey's. Hey, Roger.
Pizza coming. Yeah.
Do you think Matt will be jealous that we got Papanino's without him today?
Yeah. No, because actually he'll hope that we'll be too stuffed from it, that we won't buy it for next week.
Why, he doesn't like the pizza?
Well, he loves the pizza. He's trying to not eat so much.
Oh, I see.
He's complaining we're making him gain weight.
Once a week?
Yeah.
What's he doing the other 6 days?
I talk to him.
Don't blame one night's pizza. There's six other days in there.
Yeah, right.
Eating Dairy Queen.
Yeah,
eating
exactly. Dairy Queen. Well, you know, that team, you know, my team is winning, and I put on 10 pounds.
There you go.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, what I love, and it's coming up in August in the next couple, 3-4 weeks, I love to watch, and it is my goal to one day go to Williamsport and watch the Little League World Series.
Oh, yeah, that's a big deal, yeah.
I love to watch that. I played baseball through high school, and in fact, one of my great memories in 1975 as an 11-year-old, I played in Wrigley Field.
Wow.
And I was on the city championship team. Kilbourne Park on the northwest side on Addison and Kilbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And we beat Gage Park, the south side team, 8-1. And we played in Wrigley Field, and I was the catcher. And Mayor Richard J. Daley threw out the first pitch to me.
Wow.
And I have that ball. I still have the signed ball that Mayor Richard J. Daley
very cool.
threw, and in fact, it was a big news because at that time in the 70s, you didn't get access to a major league field like they now kids can go on and for
run
you know,
the
charity or run the bases. You didn't get that access at all.
No.
So the chance that we got to play at Wrigley Field was unbelievable, especially I was a Northwest Side fan, a Cub fan, lived about 6-7 miles away from Wrigley right off of Addison. So this was such a huge deal, and the Tribune and Sun-Times were even out there, and so they got a picture of me. So he threw the pitch from the stands, you know how Howard Taft used to do it?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so he was just from there, and he threw it to me, and I caught it, and I ran back, and I'm leaning against the brick.
And he says, and this is what he sounded like.
Hey, Mr. Daley, Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. He's like, I hope you guys lose, because I'm from the South Side, and I hope that your North Siders lose to my South Side team. And then we beat the hell out of them, 8-1.
How'd you do that day?
1-for-3 and a double.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Okay.
And I scored 2 runs.
All right.
Because I walked one time as well.
Not bad.
Had a good game. Our pitcher not only threw a great game, 8-1, he hit 2 home runs.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they're not over the fence, obviously, but he hit them in a gap, and they rolled all
the
way
out.
Yeah, he hit 2 home runs. Yeah, Tommy Becker was his name. He had an incredible game. In fact, his picture was on the front page of the Tribune that next day.
Mm.
I won a lot of money on that game, too.
but it was great because I was
the fix was him.
Yeah. Well, I was the catcher, too, so it was great because I did the whole Yogi Berra thing. So after the last strikeout of the game, I ran up to him and grabbed him and picked him up like Don Larson.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, but I have this great picture, which I still have, so I ran and I went by the brick, and I'm waiting on the side, and there's a picture of Daley signing the ball and me waiting for him to as he's signing it, leaning on the brick.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. What a great memory.
And he had to slip him a 20, too, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. but he got my dad a job, so, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he promised to sign up 20 people in the graveyard.
And it was amazing. The next day, our garbage was completely picked up.
There you go.
It was unbelievable.
I love that.
And during the winter, our alley was totally plowed.
Sure.
It's unbelievable. It's amazing what one win did.
Breeze makes the bake and burn, buddy.
Oh, yeah, everybody on 4940 Roscoe, on the 4900 block of Roscoe, loved us for about a year. The streets and sand were all over our block. It was unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, good luck to Matt's teams there. Then that's great. But
we'll have to get an update next week.
My goal, I want to go to Williamsport just one time and watch.
Do it.
Yeah, I watch those every year. Mm-hmm. And what I love about watching those actually is the graphics that they have. When you watch the game, it's like, you know, they have the kids' height and weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says favorite food.
Right.
And it's always pizza. Or chicken tenders.
Yeah, chicken wings. Yeah.
Chicken wings, chicken tenders, macaroni and cheese. I love
it. And the funny thing is, it really is a World Series.
Yeah.
Because you have teams from Taiwan and Japan.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
You know, that come in and play. It's
great. They have the international bracket, and then they have the American bracket, and then at the end... the American bracket plays the international bracket, and let's not forget the controversy of what, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years ago when the team, the Jackie Robinson team from Chicago,
was
in that.
Yeah, the ages and the locations of where the kids are from. You're right. Yeah,
that was a big thing. But I just want to go to see that in person because
that would be fun.
Yeah, I don't even know where the hell Williamsport is, but it just looks like a really cool. I really want to do is slide down that hill on a piece of cardboard.
Out in the outfield.
Yeah, if you ever watch that, there's always kids sliding down the hill on the piece of cardboard, especially when it rains. So good luck to Matt Bubala and his kids and whatever team he's managing. Go get them.
Is that in Pennsylvania, Williamsport?
Yes, Williamsport, Pennsylvania, correct.
Yeah.
Like, where would I fly into, Roger?
Well, let's see. Oh, I'm glad you asked that.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Transportation. They have a Williamsport Regional Airport.
They do?
Several miles east of the city.
Really?
2 flights daily to Philadelphia. Oh. So you'll have to fly into Philadelphia.
Into Philly and Philly into Williamsport.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Or you could take Trailways, bus service.
Okay, what am I? I'm Elton Jim. I'm not
on the road again.
Trailways.
I say we do a car trip.
There you go.
Yeah, that would be fun. I still want to go to. Mick, have you ever been to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown?
I have not, but I'd like to go.
Yeah,
sometime.
I want to go to that too. I've made up a list on my. I've got a list here of places that I have to go to see, and I am slowly.
Can I
like,
come?
Certainly. Where do you want to go?
On an adventure?
Yeah, you want to go on an adventure? Okay, we'll go to Williamsport.
Okay,
we'll do a Jesse, road trip. There you go.
Hey, Jesse, didn't Matt say that he went to the Baseball Hall of Fame?
I think he did.
Yeah, I'm dying to go there. Yeah,
yeah.
Let's just call him right now. Wake him up.
I want to see Ron Santos. I want to see my plaque. Because I never got a chance to see it while I was alive. The G-damn Hall of Fame didn't put me in until I was dead. Come on! Gee whiz!
We'll take you there, Ronnie.
Oh, thank you, Roger Badass. Oh my God! I mean, and I got it. Then they couldn't even give me my statue until I died. Either I would have died when I was 55 if I would have known this was to happen. I wouldn't have stayed around till 70.
Well, settle down. It's okay.
All right. Hi, Michael. Michael Klayler. How you doing? And Robert Badass. Oh, it's so great to be back on.
It's good to have you, Ronnie.
It's so great to be back.
Ronnie, go back to sleep.
It's so good to be back on WGN. And it's so great to see John Madden managing the Cubs and winning the World Series.
What's
that?
Oh,
she's got her own show going on.
Yeah, I know. You guys carry on. We got to talk about what's the matter, Jess?
This is important news. 312 texted in and says, "Hi, Roger and Jim. Be sure to tell Matt if they win, I'll donate a Dilly Bar gift card."
Yeah, a Dilly Bar.
Oh, yeah.
That's from
yeah.
Dairy Queen.
Yeah,
Dilly Bars are from Dairy Queen.
Oh.
I used to make those.
See, Jessica, it's all tied in.
I used to make those, and you still remember the little curly cue on the cone.
Oh, yes.
You had to make the curly cue.
You worked at Dairy Queen?
Yeah, on Howard Street.
Boy, you've had quite the career, Roger.
I couldn't hold a job if you paid me.
Oh, my God. He went from Dairy Queen to working at 5 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Nice job, Roger.
Well,
nice career.
Way of McDonald's, Jewel.
It's a hell of a resume.
You like that?
Wow. It's like you and Warren Buffett. Wow.
The career trajectory is just going great.
Yeah. I've never seen someone go subterranean before.
Right, exactly. Wow. It's really drilling down.
I got news for you.
You know what? I worked at Dairy Queen. I got news for you. Early.
Dairy Queen is better than working at 3:23 in the morning. I think you peaked after Dairy Queen, Roger.
I did. On the scale, too.
My God. Hi-oh.
Art Fern.
Go to the Slusson and cut off your Slusson.
Oh, but, man. Wow. Nick, you got up early for this?
Yeah.
I know. What am I doing? Am I crazy?
The funny thing is, we were supposed to talk to Mick about Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
We're now close. 3:30.
We're close.
I have to take a break.
You know what? It's 2 o'clock just on the Pacific Ocean
somewhere.
Didn't
you just do the news?
Yeah.
My God, we got to do that again?
Time flies when you're having fun.
Tell me you are going to tell me anything different.
I will.
Than you did a half hour.
I will.
What are you going to tell me different?
I'm going to tell you a couple of different news stories.
Oh, you mean with what? With different words in them?
No.
No, he's going to do them in a different order.
Yeah, he's gonna shuffle them. I'm gonna have a new lead.
I'm gonna have an accent.
I'm gonna do a new slug.
I'll read them backwards.
Yeah. I love when he does the traffic at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Sure. We don't see any delays. Everybody's sleeping.
No, there's
of course
people
there's
driving.
No delays.
They're listening to us. They gotta stay out driving.
They're driving in their driveway.
What about all the people Ubering right now?
Uber, schmoober, nobody's Ubering. I'm looking out here.
Huh?
I'm looking at Lakeshore Drive, right?
Yeah.
Outside, right over my shoulder. Now, first of all, I see no planes landing on it.
You know what? On Columbus Drive, I'm looking at 4 cars stopped at a red light.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay, what are they doing?
Traffic stuck right there.
Yeah,
because it's a red light.
It's called the street light. It's called the stop sign. There's one on every block. News and traffic at 3 a.m. Come on, Roger. You're making all those stories up and you know it.
I'm not making anything
I'm just having fun.
I know.
I told you. Anything that is said within the next 4 hours from 1 to 5
will not be admissible in a court of law.
It's not meant. It's there for pure entertainment value. I am not a jerk. I'm a nice guy, but this Elton Jim guy is a jerk. But I myself am not
Elton
a jerk.
Jim who has to go to a break.
Yes, he does have to go. Yes, Jessica has got flames in her eyes looking at me. So we'll take a quick break. Oh, I had to laugh. Let me tell you this real quick, though, before I go. So yesterday I get a text from somebody. I did the night side show on Thursday night, Friday morning. And somebody texts me, and you know how I say no switching before I go to a break?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the explanation of that. It's a takeoff. If anybody watched Gary Shandling's show, Larry Sanders...
Right, no flipping.
He would say no flipping when he would go to commercial, meaning that you don't change the channel. So in radio, you can't flip because there's no remote control. So I say no switching as to no switching the channel.
Right.
Somebody texted me. They said, I like your show, but I really hate this no switching thing. Why do you always say that? So, of course, you know, I didn't respond. And I like to say it. That's my little tribute to Gary Shandling. It's subtle. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. 5 minutes later, he texts me back with like 75, no switching, no switching, no switching, no switching. It's driving him crazy, apparently.
I think you think you hit a nerve?
I guess. So let me just say this. It's 3:27. We're back after this. No switching. It is 3:30. After the news, I will continue to talk to Mick Kaler, and we'll see what we'll talk about. And then, as I said, a little later in the show, I will play a little segment from an interview I did about 2 years ago with Val Camaletti, who owned Val's Halla's Records in Oak Park. She passed away this week at 78. Sadly succumbed to breast cancer, but she was an icon for anybody in the local Chicago music scene, and especially if you love music and love to buy records. Her record store was an iconic place. 46 years in Oak Park. In fact, today and tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, they will still be holding what was already planned before she passed, her annual birthday celebration called the Hallapalooza,
from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. today, Saturday, and 11 p.m. till 5 p.m., 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. on Sunday. Music, live music, sales, and now certainly it's going to become a memorial, and it's the fun, I'm sure, swapping stories about this special woman. And we will tell you just how special she is by letting her speak for herself in this interview that I did a couple of years ago. But right now it is 3:31, and here is Roger Badish with the news. Jim Toronto with you here, Elton Jim, filling in for Matt Bubala. Be here for another hour and a half or so. Phone number is 312-981-7200. And now we have the official beginning of what I like to call the Pop Culture Club. And Mick has joined us for the last hour and a half. I'm going to keep you here for at least another half hour or so, if you will.
We finally got to the Pop Culture Club.
Well, we've had a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking time and staying up early or late, whatever you want to call it. Mick Kaler, whose work can be heard on a regular basis on the WGN television news on Channel 9 almost weekly. He and a friend of his, Al Flash, write parody songs that the news folks play on a regular basis there. You got anything new in the hopper?
We actually do. We sent one in last week for Robin that they haven't played yet, about trying to get her out more often because Robin Baumgarten likes to hang out at her house. And we have one in the works this weekend for next weekend's Lollapalooza, and we're doing it to Viva Las Vegas.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Lollapalooza. Yeah, so we'll see if we get that out in time. I hope we do.
Yeah, very good. So if you watch the WGN Morning News on Channel 9, you will hear Mick's name, and you will hear his work, and sometimes even play the videos with those, don't they?
Yeah, that's they do. We put the videos to them so that they can play them, and yeah. Not just listen to a song, right?
Yeah, very cool. So anyway, Mick and I have known each other for, I'm afraid to say how long, but I consider Mick not only a good friend, but a pop culture guru. Like myself, so we always like to talk a little pop culture. And so we were talking, I mentioned before, I don't know how much there's more to say about Mick Jagger, but it is really amazing the shape he is in and the fact. I mean, all I would say really quickly about the Rolling Stones, I don't know how you feel, Mick. I think I do, but we can talk about it anyway. When we talk about the big three, when you talk about the big British invasion bands of the 60s, the order is usually Beatles, Rolling Stones, and The Who.
Right.
And a close fourth are the Kinks. But I appreciate the Stones. I've seen them in concert. I have many of their albums. I am a fan of their music, no question. But for me, it's always been Beatles, The Who, and the Stones.
As far as preference, yeah, same with me, for sure.
I mean, I appreciate the Stones, and certainly their—I mean, they love Chicago too. I mean, my gosh, they made pilgrimages here to Chess Records before they were even really that popular, and they wrote a song about Chess Records, you know, and stuff like that. But I give them credit because they did do a lot in terms of you know, bringing the blues to a whole new generation of white people who never even heard it before. So there's no question about their legacy, and my gosh, their sheer longevity at this point alone is admirable. But I think Pete Townshend is such a good, and I love Roger Daltrey's voice, and I love Keith Moon's drumming, and I love John Entwistle's bass playing. So what can I say? But what would you say is your favorite Rolling Stones album?
You know, I was thinking about that when you told me we were going to be talking about this tonight, and of course I love Sticky Fingers because it's such a classic.
But what about a Rolling Stones album?
You know, with a little zipper and all that. Yeah. So anyway, Sticky Fingers. But you know, the album that I think sometimes gets short shrift, and it shouldn't, because it's a great record. Almost every song is Some Girls.
I love Some Girls. Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. I think why some people kind of put down Some Girls is because when Miss You was it was 40 years ago this summer.
Yeah. 1978.
40 years ago, Miss You was all over the radio. And, of course, disco was going on, and people said, oh, the Stones did a disco record.
Right.
They did not do a disco record. It was a rhythm and blues record, and that was a very danceable song. But when you look at that entire album, every song on it is a great song, even the ones that weren't hits. You know, Shattered, When the Whip Comes Down. Those are great songs, and they stand the test of time.
Beast of Burden is on there.
And I'll tell you something else. And I know in the past they had covered Ain't Too Proud to Beg. I love the Stones version of Just My Imagination.
Oh, yeah, and then what about Respectable?
Yeah.
Is another rock song. And then one of my favorite hidden nuggets of the Rolling Stones is also on that album, which is this country song called Faraway Eyes.
In fact, I remember when we saw the Stones together and in 02, and they were featuring different songs each night from a specific album, and they did Some Girls, and they played that song, and I thought, I'm in heaven.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is an underrated album. In fact, you know, a lot of their late 70s albums are not really held in high esteem. It's mostly the late 60s or early 70s with your Beggar's Banquet and your Exile on Main Street, and, you know, and those. But I mean, Some Girls, even Emotional Rescue, which wasn't as good as Some Girls, but then, I mean, as much as it's a pop album to a great extent, Tattoo You from 1981.
Again, and I think as far as like landmark records, that for me personally, I thought that was their best of the last of the most recent, and that was of course on the wings of the big 81 tour. That's when they got into the corporate sponsorship with Jovan, like you said before, the pay-per-view show that they did. This is where things got more corporate, but that album was a great album. Remember Hang Fire?
Oh,
Waiting on a Friend and Little TNA. I mean, this is a great song.
Oh, yeah, no, like I said, and the funny part is a great part of that album was made up of outtakes.
Yeah.
Those weren't even new songs. They kind of cobbled that album together from older songs that they had written that didn't make previous albums, and it turned out being one of their better albums and probably one of their best-selling albums of all time, clearly.
If I'm not mistaken, I think their former guitarist Mick Taylor was responsible for part of the riff of Start Me Up.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I read in the past. So, again, that was obviously stockpiled from the past, but that's the kind of catalog this band has had.
Yeah, there's no question, like I said. We'll see how much longer they can go on. I mean, health-wise, they seem to be in pretty good health. As we said before, Mick Jagger turned 75 yesterday, and that's what we're talking about this. And one of the living miracles of modern medicine is that Keith Richards is still alive.
Keith Richards, sharks, and cockroaches are the ones that survived the nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, and so they still look like they're having fun. Ronnie Wood has certainly become, a major part of that band over all these years after Mick Taylor left. And, of course, he replaced Brian Jones, who was actually one of the founders of the band and was the leader of the band for many years before he passed away, tragically. And I believe it was 1969. So they've had their history. They've had their hits. And now they are certainly one of the classics of the classic rock bands. And so happy birthday to Mick Jagger. He was just a father a couple of years ago.
I know, the guy's still doing that too.
So not only is he still rocking, but he's still rolling, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the plumbing's still working. Yeah,
no kidding. Wow. He's like Picasso. But what I wanted to talk about, too, which just happened today, and I didn't even give you a heads up on this, but you know, you can just react if you'd like to. So did you see the story that the CBS CEO, Les Moonves, has now been accused of sexual misconduct by six women?
Right.
And so the CBS board has said that they are going to begin an investigation. And, they will take the appropriate action based on the results of that investigation. So this is an interesting story for a couple of reasons. First of all, Les Moonves has been, a lot of people might laugh about CBS, and they always talk about it's the old person's network, because most of the shows appeal to older demographic. But at the same time, you cannot argue with success. And CBS in the last 10 years or so, year in and year out, is the number one network and the most watched network. And even though its shows are not cutting edge and it's more of your Big Bangs and your Criminal Minds and, NCIS or NCSI.
CSI, right, yeah.
Yeah, Criminal Minds and Mom and some of these shows and Big Brother. it might not be cutting edge television, and but you know, but they've got football, they've got golf. They are the number. They are the most watched network, and that has been mostly under Les Moonves's tenure. So this will be interesting because I don't think he's in any rush to leave.
No.
And so if he is removed, that can have big implications on the way the direction the network takes. One of the first things that I thought of when I heard this news was how, you know, he's married to Julie Chen.
Right.
Who is on Big Brother and also on The View and every other show on CBS.
The Talk, I think it is.
Oh, The Talk. I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah.
You know, with Sharon Osbourne. So my question now is, you know, that is a female-dominated show. Obviously, the Me Too movement and the whole topic of sexual harassment, which has exploded over the last, you know, 7 or 8 months. How is Julie Chen going to handle this topic?
I know.
I mean, they have to bring it up on The Talk.
Yeah, they
right?
can't ignore it. They obviously have to address it, and it's embarrassing. I guess some of these allegations are from about 20 years ago.
Yeah, they are, and I want to bring up something up on that whole thing. But I'm just saying, my gosh, I mean, you know how outspoken, and that's part of the whole lure of this of these kind of shows like The View and The Talk, that they, you know, there's all this kind of arguing and these big pronouncements and declarations and so on. Julie Chen's going to have an interesting, you know, I don't know how she either defends or she just takes the fifth or they don't bring it up. That's what
maybe she takes off a few days. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see how she handles that. But here's what I want to bring up on this, on a larger and a troubling, potentially troubling thing that I've identified here. So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I believe it was in Vanity Fair, I'm reading this article and they're talking about the Summer Redstone is one of the, is like Rupert Murdoch, a huge kind of media baron.
Right. Owns, long time, very, very old man, but long time mogul.
Owns CBS, owns Viacom, owns some amusements company, you know, all diversified, but, you know, a major, major player. He's, not, like you said, he's 95 years old. There are some questions about his capacity, if he is up to even being still the CEO of this company. And so there is a little, you know, palace intrigue here in that, as you would expect, much like the show Succession, if you're watching that on HBO, about an older media baron who's got some kids that are trying to take over the business from him.
Yeah.
Apparently, Summer Redstone hates his daughter.
Right. There's a big family issue. Yeah.
Hates his daughter, and yet she is in line to run the business and is. The head of one of the businesses. Now, her goal is she wants to merge Viacom and CBS. And apparently, Les Moonves says, I don't think so. I don't want that to happen. So there's some little tension here. So I just read this story about how, you know, Les Moonves now may be on the way out because Redstone's daughter wants this merger to happen, and he's kind of against it and blocking it. And so, okay, I read this story a couple weeks ago, and I just say, oh, I just file it away. Then I hear about this today. Now, do you think it's a coincidence?
That, yeah, it's not, you know, well, and I think that, I don't think it's a coincidence because Ronan Farrow, who's written the article on this Moonves thing, he's been investigating this for quite some time.
So, but here's my question. What I fear, and I mean, he broke the Harvey Weinstein story,
yeah.
So, and he won a Pulitzer Prize, so there's no question about his integrity and his journalism. And I'll take this story, on its basis, and we'll find out what it is. I'm not on one side or the other. I'm not defending Les Moonves, and I'm not passing judgment. But what scares me, though, is I read this story like 3 or 4 weeks ago, as I said, about this backstage palace intrigue about, you know, these factions and these mergers and this person doesn't like that person. They want to move this person out and this person's got a power play going. And then suddenly there is this explosive story about Les Moonves, which is right at the time when this merger that he's against, they're trying to push through. And here's my fear. At this stage right now, anything that sniffs of sexual misconduct, of sexual harassment, is immediately a major story.
Yeah, it's a big flash bomb.
And it's also in the court of public opinion, the judgment is usually very swift, and it's usually against the man.
Right.
And so what scares me is, I don't know if Les Moonves did this or not. We'll find that out. What I'm afraid of is now, moving forward, knowing how inflammatory and how sensitive this issue of sexual harassment or sexual misconduct can be, and how it can literally change someone's life and ruin their career overnight. And that's almost not, that's not even an exaggeration. What I fear is, if someone's out to get someone now, do you just dig up? I mean, like you said, these accusations are from 20-some years ago.
Right.
Against Les Moonves. What I fear is, moving forward now, if you're looking to bury someone, if you're vengeful, or you're looking at a power play like this whole CBS Viacom thing, I'm not saying this is happening, but I'm just afraid now that it's easy to throw some dirt on people when you charge sexual harassment or sexual misconduct. It immediately gets picked up, and for the most part, the public perception is against the man. And I'm wondering, is this going to be used as a weapon now against people? That, I mean, this is a very serious topic, but I hate to be used as a weapon when something really didn't happen. But you know, hey, let's just throw an allegation out there because we can start to smear somebody.
Right, yeah, and it can taint a situation or a person. Well, it could keep going on. Now, did you hear that Moonves did put out a statement?
No, what did he say? Do you know?
He said, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing,
yeah,
that he denies that something really bad happened or that bad things were going on, but he also acknowledged he may have at times been a little too friendly or a little too inappropriate.
Really? Wow.
But he's been very general with what he said about that.
Right.
So he's almost like saying, well, someone might have misinterpreted when I did this or did that or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that, again, like you said, can build and mushroom into something really major. And who knows? Maybe it happened, maybe it didn't. But I got to be honest, Jim, I think this stuff's going to be going on for a while because,
oh, yeah.
I know several people who, until the Me Too thing came out, someone I work with very closely, I didn't know what she had gone through till the Me Too thing came out, and then she told me stories. I'm like, oh, my God. And there's probably a lot of stories like that out there.
Well, for every Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey or Bill Cosby, there is another side of the coin, and now, you know, the guy Chris Hardwick, who founded Nerdist, he used to be on with Jenny McCarthy. Dating show on MTV? Remember that show
the single one, yeah. Something like that.
And then he's been the host of NBC's The Wall, and he's gone to fame doing these talk after shows with The Walking Dead. So a former girlfriend of his made some allegations. He was immediately taken off the TV shows.
Yeah, that's immediate reaction,
He was wiped off. Now, I just read this week that Comedy Central or AMC did an investigation, and now they're reinstating him.
Yeah, and part of the problem with that, like you said, when it becomes public, everybody has their automatic opinion, oh, he's guilty of this or guilty of that. Maybe things shouldn't become public like that until a full vetting has been done to say, yes, he did this, or no, he did not do this.
Yeah, well, that would be in a perfect world, but unfortunately in today's media, there's no rules, there's no boundaries.
Or Instagram something out, and next thing you know, it goes worldwide.
Yeah, there are no more editors, sadly. So we've lost that. But I just wanted to let people know, as I said, I'm not on one side or the other here. If Les Moonves did this, then he needs to be punished either legally or you know, just with his job, whatever it is. You certainly have to, you know, give credence when an allegation is made, especially of this way. The woman, certainly deserves some some benefit of the doubt at the beginning. But at the same time, the person that's accused also deserves their day in court or their day to show that they didn't do it. And so,
well, yeah, it's a valid concern for sure.
Yeah, there needs to be a balance here. And I think we've been swaying one side over the other. But I'll tell you, there is a lot hanging on this. It's not just another white guy in a powerful position. As I said, there's this backstory going on with this merger and Summer Redstone, and it smacks like, I hope this isn't some weird kind of Shakespearean conspiracy going on.
Or Machiavellian play, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. But, Mick, I'm going to let you go to sleep finally. How about that?
Well, I've been up all night, so I'm ready to go, so...
Thank you so much, Mick. I appreciate you staying up with us and contributing. And thank you for being my grout.
You bet, pal. I'll grout you anytime you want.
Thank you for filling in my cracks.
All right, man. Later.
I'm Jim Toronto, filling in for Matt Bubala. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 720 AM in Chicago. Yes, Valhalla. As I was saying earlier this week, Val Camaletti, who was the owner of a record store in Oak Park for 46 years, called Val's Halla. It was a new and used record store, and Val was there, as I said, for 46 years. A trailblazer in many ways, not only as a business person to keep a record store open for that long, especially in today's climate, but also a very pioneering spirit to be a female business owner. When she started that place 46 years ago, there were not many females opening their own business. And not only was she a savvy business owner, but she also became a mentor for many more females who were looking to open up their own businesses. And she was very active in the Oak Park area and the Oak Park arts community. In fact, I saw a picture today at the Lake Theater in Oak Park, which is right on Lake Street in downtown Oak Park. On the marquee of the theater, it said, rest in peace, Val Camaletti, you will be missed. And I had been going to Val's for decades. And because I became such a regular customer, I came to know her and became a friend. And many times I'd go into the store and not even buy anything, and I'd still be talking to her for 2 hours. She had some amazing stories. Earlier in her career, before she opened the record store, she worked for Capitol Records and in the promotion department while the Beatles and the Beach Boys were on Capitol Records in the early 60s. She was there for almost ground zero of when the whole renaissance of rock and roll in the British invasion took place in the early to mid-60s. So she had a full life. She sadly passed away this week at age 78 from breast cancer. But as I said, she really was inspirational, articulate, funny, knowledgeable. I did an interview with her here on WGN in April of 2016. So I thought I would share this because there's a lot being said about her. As I said, her obituary made the Tribune, made the Sun Times, was on TV stations, was on Channel 11, was covered. And people might say, what's the big deal about this person? Well, I want to give you a little slice and hopefully you can get a little flavor of what was so unique and so special about Val Camaletti. Right now is Val Camaletti from Val's Halla in Oak Park. And so this past weekend was Record Store Day, which started, about 9-10 years ago?
This was the 9th year. I kept saying the 6th, It was the 9th. I just turned it upside down.
And this was started by the record industry or the record stores to sort of help independent. How did it start?
Yeah, we don't really know a lot. It turns out that it was a group of people who were in retail who got together and created something called recordstoreday.com. And they have been responsible for starting the whole idea. And then they have been the liaison with the record labels, sort of working with them and persuading them that it's a good idea to put out some interesting stuff that might that people might be interested
in. Drive traffic to your stores.
Right. Really to celebrate the independent record stores. I mean, just to come in, even if you didn't buy anything, just to come into a record store and celebrate an independent record store. Well, of course, the cat got out of the bag, and it is now insane.
And now you have a huge... Now, tell this. You opened...
We opened two hours early. Yeah, it's Saturday. We opened 2 hours early. We opened at 9 instead of 11. I got there about 8 o'clock, and I asked the first person in line what time they got there, and they got there at 4:45.
Because the idea is that there's only X amount of product of this hard-to-find stuff that's released on this day only. And you can't hold it for anybody, no. So it's first come.
Oh, no, man, the rules are really stringent.
So it's first come, first serve. So that's why people were literally in line for 4 hours.
Quarter to five in the morning. And our customers are late birders. I've heard stories. I mean, the guy who owns Dusty Grooves and I were on with Dave Hoekstra here on NGN last year before Record Store Day.
Uh-huh.
And their line starts about 2 a.m.
Wow.
And we saw some stuff on Facebook this year of some people who were saying, okay, only 23 and a half hours left.
And you had, and so you made a full day of it. You had live bands.
We have a stage on this store. If anybody was ever in my old store, if anybody wanted to play, they would have had to play single file.
Right.
Because the store was only 9 feet wide, the original store. This store, we have a stage, a real stage with a sound system. So we had 7 bands, thanks to, I have to give a shout out to Bill Cavanaugh, who owns Bob Dog Studios in Oak Park. And he curated the stage. He had 7 bands. They were awesome.
My guest right now is Val Camaletti from Val's Hala in Oak Park. At exactly 239 Harrison in Oak Park, one of the great independent record stores in the Chicago area. Been in Oak Park for what, over 40 years? Almost 50?
Almost 50.
And this is your second location. You had a first location closer to off of
South Boulevard, which was right Oak Park Avenue Oak Park and the Avenue. Green Line.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then
right
now you've moved into sort of the Arts District.
That's the Arts District on Harrison, Street, right?
And you've got certainly a much bigger space.
You know, the space is actually not a whole lot bigger, Jim,
really?
But it's configured without a wall in the middle.
That helps.
The original store was actually an alleyway, and then we used the adjacent storefront. But the original store was like 9 feet wide and about 35 feet long or whatever. So everything was in corners and things. So it just looks very different. So
now we were talking about this resurgence of vinyl over the last couple of years.
Yes, bless their hearts.
How quick were you noticing that this was happening in your store?
It's been creeping around for about, I would say, between 5 and 10 years.
Even 10 years.
Yeah. I mean,
but 10 years ago, I couldn't find a turntable.
Well, no, they were there. They were there. They weren't as visible as they are now.
But I mean, now record companies are reissuing stuff
roughly,
on vinyl.
Roughly speaking, the dollar figures are, at least as I have read them, in 2005, so that would be, 11 years ago, it was at the bottom of the barrel. There were maybe 500,000 new pieces of vinyl sold in the entire United States. This last year, there's something around 12 million. Now, the big burst has been the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's really been. But as you say, independent, I mean, when we think that Record Store Day has been around for 9 years, mm-hmm. so that the first couple of years were slow, but that push toward resurgence began about 9 years ago.
Now, one of the things that you're seeing now is most bands, when they're putting out new albums, they're putting out a vinyl edition.
Usually with a download code,
right,
so that people don't have to buy the CD. They are still putting out the CD.
Definitely. Now, the thing that they're making a big deal about is this 180 grade.
180 gram?
Gram. So now my question is, because I remember buying some albums in the 70s and 80s, and those things were like soggy pizza. Some of those things...
Not only were they were meant to be, and there was a reason for it. The reality is that those bendable, what was called Dynaflex by RCA, that was the name they used for their particular ones, and we used to, part of our sales pitch when we were showing them to people was that we could bend them in half, and when you put them back on the turntable, the needle would track anything. the reality is that those bendable records will track more easily and there is less danger. On a 180, if it's warped, you're done for.
Oh, really?
That needle will come slamming down.
Oh.
However, supposedly, and I don't know anything at all about the technology and why thick records that are 180 grams.
Right.
I mean, 78s were thick too, but,
right.
you know, they crack. Just if you breathe on them, they track.
Yeah.
So it's not worth talking about with me because I have no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was technology
supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but they're pushing it that way, but truth is that if I'm going to take a chance. But the problem is that it doesn't matter because you don't have a choice.
Right. That's what they're
coming out as 180s, and that's what you got to buy if you want it in vinyl.
Now, what I find funny, too, is that when I see now, because I still kept most of my albums, there was a point where, you know, a lot of used record stores were getting all this product because people were...
Like me.
Yeah, we're getting rid of their record collections.
That's my biggest problem with this vinyl resurgence.
Yeah, you know, and so...
Is to get the good used stuff.
Oh, so you're still looking for good used stuff, huh?
Oh, that's still my primary
stock. Because now people are hoarding it because now it's the cool thing.
Well, now it's harder to get. You know, it's the stuff that we couldn't give away in our five for a dollar
right
bins,
now
now we can't get to sell used.
That's a good problem to have though, right?
Well, no, because I want the used ones.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
There still are customers, first of all, that would prefer to find used ones.
Yeah, it's the hunt.
We can still offer used product at a little cheaper. It's not as cheap as it was,
right.
You know, but it can save people a little money. And but now it's just frustrating because we don't see it as often.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, because my point was that I've still got most of my albums, and so now they're not only issuing new albums when they come out, but they're reissuing.
Oh, you bet.
Some old albums.
Well, that's what they're doing. That's what most of
yeah.
the stuff.
And
is
so I get a kick out of it because these new albums on this 100
yes 180.
They're what? How much retail?
Oh, 25? 20 to 35.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, I've got that album. I paid $3.99.
Oh, sure you
And
did.
It's the original.
Yes.
And this is they're doing a good job of reissuing
cases,
these and with the same
cases,
artwork and all
yeah.
that.
Well, not only the same artwork. In most cases, they are simply making more. I mean, there may be, you know, that's now you're running into a whole bunch of other issues involved with this whole vinyl resurgence thing. You get the, oh, but I want an original.
Right.
Well, let me tell you something. If you bought Pepper when I was at Capitol Records on the day it was released.
In June of 67.
You could have bought copy number 8.
Right.
Or copy number 70,322 or copy number 247,000.
Right.
So what's an original?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, an original, I mean, even all 250,000 copies were not the same master.
Exactly.
They could only get 70 or 80,000 off of a master. So, and you wouldn't know which ones you got because nobody told you.
So you mean to tell me that Ringo Starr didn't sell back his number one from the White Album to you?
No, he didn't. And most of the other numbers on the White Album,
yeah, because those were stamped. Yeah,
yeah, but they don't. They're not real.
Oh,
they're not really.
Oh no!
The
don't
numbers.
Tell me that.
No, no. The one that says 092473.
Right, yeah.
That's not really.
Oh, fail.
2,900. No.
Why don't you
sorry.
Tell me? Why don't you just tell me there's no Santa?
Oh, you thought there was?
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Val Camaletti to talk more about vinyl and where it's going, or is it? Have we hit the apex? Who knows?
Better not.
It's not good for business.
Uh-uh.
And hopefully, we'll get some a few little stories here, quick stories about Val, because she worked at Capitol Records.
Yes.
When the Beatles and the Beach Boys were both on that
1962
label.
1962 to 1967.
That is awesome. Weekday mornings from 4 to 10. It has everything you need to know and some things that you just need to see. That's WGN Morning News, and it's Chicago's must-watch morning news. We're going to be right back after this. No switching. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN Radio, AM 720 in Chicago. It's about 921. Be with you here until 11. We're talking to Val Camaletti from Val's Hala here in the Oak Park. Been there for 40 years with the great independent record stores. After we talk to Val a little later, we're going to talk a little politics with my friend Doug O'Brien, who's going to give us a little insight. You always wonder, who is this Republican establishment they keep talking about? Doug is one of them, and he's damn proud of it. And we're going to hear what the establishment has to say. And then we're going to do a little pop culture club with Mikayla to kick things off because or get things done. Because it is 420, man. And so maybe we'll end the show on a nice little cool breeze and some stoner music just to feel the vibe. But first, as I said, we're talking to Val here, and she's been giving us some insights on this new resurgence in the vinyl world, which has certainly helped your business as an independent record store. And it just was record store day over the weekend, and it sounds like you said you had lines, which this is so great to hear, that you literally had, you opened up at 9, and you had people waiting in line from 4 a.m., and it went down the block.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's one other reason that it's really fun, and that is the passion with which young people are buying music who buy vinyl.
Yeah.
It's a different.
Well, you know, once again, too, the one thing I used to love doing when I would buy an album is I would open it up, I would lay down on the floor, I would look at the album. Hopefully it had a gatefold. So it opened up. So there was more album art and more pictures, and hopefully the lyrics were there either on a separate lyric sheet in the fold or on the album. I would read the liner notes. I would read everything about who the musicians were on each song. And then, as I said, what you talked about, Yes, and some of these bands where the album art is just as important.
Absolutely.
As the album itself.
Absolutely.
Sticky Fingers with the zipper on it. And my own beloved Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy was a work of art. If you pull that gatefold open.
Yep.
It was a huge.
Opened up
to a huge thing. And inside, there was a poster of the album.
Yep.
And a lyric book and a scrapbook.
Yeah.
That was Elton John at its pinnacle in 1975. But that was so great about that's what I think what people are reacting to. It was an experience. It wasn't just, now, unfortunately, I believe a lot because of
the. It was a relationship.
Well, the convenience of music, sadly, has brought it into more people's hands. People
Absolutely.
Have more access to it. But sadly, it's also, I think, made it a commodity. It's less important. It's less an event.
Well, it's
unless you do something with vinyl where you are forced to sit down and listen to that first album and turn it over.
Yeah. The absolute reality is that music has taken a place along with there so many other things. There are the same 24 hours in a day.
Right.
There are 140 channels. There's a computer. There's a phone that does everything but wash the floor on its own.
Right.
There are video. I mean, the video game world is an entire world that most of us or many of us know nothing about, and that's got to fit in. I mean, when you're talking about the era that you're talking about, there was a bowling team.
Yeah, there weren't as many distractions. Everybody was not fighting for the same 24 hours.
No, music was the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
You walked into my store in the 60s and the 70s, and the chances are when you walked in, I could take probably a pretty good stab at where you were musically. It was everything. It was a be-all and end-all.
We've got a phone caller here. Let's see. It's Bobby from Cicero. You there, Bobby?
Hey, Elton, Jim, and Val. This is Chopper Bobby from Cicero.
Hi, Bobby.
How's it going, man?
Hey. Yeah. Man, listen to the station all day long. Val, we've been going to you since we were teenagers going to Led Zeppelin shows here in downtown, and We love it. We love everything about the whole. We still got Styx albums.
Awesome.
And my brother David, he's a draftsman, but he's a real good artist. He's a musician, and he long time ago he received a book. I don't know if it was a gift or what. But it was who did all the album covers for Yes, Uriah Heep? I think it was Roger Dean.
Oh, that sounds. I don't know them all. I know that Maxwell Parrish was one of the people who did a bunch of the psychedelic posters in the 60s and early 70s. I don't. That Roger Dean name sounds familiar. That may be right. I don't know the artist on those. But yeah, there were books of those. I have a huge book at the store that has. Like hundreds of just covers from that period.
I'm not sure if it was covers or just Roger Dean's work, but the book was probably 3/4 inch thick.
Oh yeah,
and it was. I mean, them Yes covers with the big fish on the mushrooms. Like, I mean, you could just look.
Oh yeah, album art cover. But album art cover goes back to the 50s and the 40s and the 50s as being truly wonderful stuff. It's a whole world all its own.
Thank you, Bobby. And I got to just mention real quicker because we have to run here. You had you worked for Capitol Records.
I did.
You had a chance to see the Beatles.
I did.
At Comiskey Park.
I did.
And you didn't go.
You betcha I didn't go.
And why didn't you go?
I didn't go because I was not 14.
But it's the Beatles.
I was 23.
It's the Beatles.
Yes, and there were going to be, as there were, 57,000 little girls there.
57,004. And the four people were the Beatles.
No, you don't understand. They were my band. I was not going to subject myself to interference when my band was playing.
I understand that, but it's history.
No.
Yes.
It's not history. It wasn't history then. It wasn't history then, and they were going to interfere with my band.
And they never toured again after that.
And that's why.
Oh. Jeez.
And if I had been there, it wouldn't have helped.
Okay. Well, let me thank Val Camaletti for coming in here for the last 45 minutes or so and talking about record stores and vinyls and music and how she didn't go to see the Beatles.
She didn't go to see the Beatles. Oh, only Val would stand on principle. Oh, loved Val Camaletti of Val's Hala in Oak Park, owner of one of the best record stores ever for 46 years. We will miss you. If you want to pay tribute to Val or just have some fun with some local music, they were going to go on with the 46th anniversary special that they already had planned. Sadly, Val passed away before this weekend, but they're going to go on with it as planned. Their Hallapalooza, which will be on today, Saturday, from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m., and tomorrow, 11 p.m. until 5 p.m. And I also should tell you that there is a GoFundMe page for the Val Camaletti Memorial Fund if you want to make a donation to that as well. So that was Val, one of a kind. Oak Park and Chicago will always miss you. She was living proof that all you need is love. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Matt Bubala. We'll be back for another half hour or so. I hope you'll stay with us till 5. Then we hand things off to Orion Samuelson. But right now we hand things off to Roger Badish in the news. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM in Chicago. Filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Be here for another 20 minutes or so, and then we'll pass things off to Orion Samuelson. And hopefully have a chance to talk with Big O as we, as I said, pass it off to him, and he'll do his thing as only he can do it. Thanks for everyone for calling in today and texting in. We've had a lot of fun. I've really appreciated your input. Thank you for being my grout. You are my grout. You fill in my cracks. I lay this tile down of a show, and then I count on you through the texts and the phone to fill in those cracks, to fill in those gaps, and you've done a great job tonight, and I really appreciate that. And somebody else who's done a great job tonight is my producer, Jessica Raines, and she's actually got an interesting kind of personal news story to talk about in that her hometown – has been in the news this week. So, Jessica, what's going on in the beautiful metropolis of Elburn, Illinois?
Well, Elburn is a very small town.
Now, I should just say, the only way I know Elburn is because I used to take the Metro train, all the time when I lived in the northwest suburbs, and I always saw that the last stop on that line that I used to take was Elburn, right?
Yeah, that's probably how most people in the city would refer to what Elburn is, because it's
the last stop.
Yeah, so it's like it's far west of Chicago as you can go.
You know what the population is?
No, but I have a computer in Roger Badish.
If there was only
don't draw me into this.
If there was only a device that we had access to that could get us an answer to a question like that, Roger, wouldn't that be... There's something you should work on, Roger.
Actually, I'm working on something else, trying to figure out the lyrics to the song Last Train to Elburn.
Last train to Elburn, and I'm sitting at the station.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Don't worry. Get back to me later.
Be here by 4:30. You have my reservation. So anyway, if you can find that out, that would be great. But so Elburn is a small town, right?
Yes, it is.
And you were born there?
Yes. Well, Caneville, which is the town right next to it.
Now you're getting him confused.
Here we go. Caneville.
He doesn't know where that is on the stop.
It's about a 5-minute drive.
She's like, yeah, I live in Caneville just outside of Elburn. Oh, really?
Big city.
That makes it a lot easier now.
Well, actually, the thing is, Caneville is so small. So if you have a post, if you have a mailbox in front of your house, you have an Elburn address.
She's like an RFD. Mm-hmm. Like Elburn RFD,
if I may.
I should be the spokesperson for Caneville.
Well, you probably are the only person who can speak English.
Here is the population of Elburn.
What is it?
By the way, they have a 3-star hotel there.
Nice.
The mayor is Jeffrey D. Walter.
And did he win again?
Yes, he did.
Oh.
He always wins. It's a monarchy, actually. population as of 2016.
Yes.
5,757 people.
That's not so bad.
No, it's big town.
How about Caneville? Look up Caneville.
Caneville.
I just Googled it.
It's not even on there.
You got Caneville already?
Yeah, 490.
Okay. Oh, my God. That's Mayberry.
That's a suburb.
That's Mayberry.
Yeah.
That's Caneville. I mean, I don't even think Mayberry had more people than that.
You know how small that town is? The welcome to and you are now leaving sign around one post.
Elburn is Mount Pilot compared to Caneville.
Yes. We're going dancing in Mount Pilot.
We have the fun girls. Hi, Dal.
Hi, Bernie. Earlier on the show, we got a call from Geneva. Geneva's not too far from...
Oh, so you're not too far from Geneva?
Mm-mm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I actually been
to Geneva.
It's so small. It's just a little drive-by.
But I like not how she Lake says, Geneva. Geneva.
No, I know.
Okay.
It's out on... it's past, St. Charles, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look at you. Hey, Mr. World Traveler.
Well, I've done some plays out in the St. Charles
oh,
area.
Oh, that's right.
I did...
He's been on the boards.
Amadeus, in fact. I was Salieri. I screamed at God for 3 hours.
There you go.
So tell us the story. So in Elburn, aside from being the last stop on the Metro line, up to this point, that was the most it was known for, and hopefully the burgeoning town of Caneville can top 500 in population soon. So what's going on in Elburn that we should know about?
So there was, if anyone is familiar with Reams Meat Market.
Oh, sure. You mean Reams in Elburn?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's where they were filming it.
over at Reams?
Yeah.
In Elburn?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody, right now when you said that, everybody can picture it.
Everyone knows what Elburn is.
They know exactly where Reams is in Elburn. No question.
So... they had their old location, which closed down because they bought a new space.
Reams?
To expand.
Sure.
So their old building was the site for this new show.
What? So a new TV show
mm-hmm.
is filming in Elburn.
Yeah. How exciting, right?
So how the heck did they... I'd love to know,
And we were, and much to Jessica's credit, we did try to get someone from HBO or from the production company of this new HBO movie or series on to talk, but no one wanted to get up at 4:30, which I understand. That's fine. But I would love to know how the heck the production company found Elburn, of all places.
That is a good question.
Unless they got on a Metra train and fell asleep and went past their stop and went to the last stop and got out at Elburn and said, hey, well, this place doesn't look bad.
Maybe.
And it's easy to get to because we can't miss it.
Yeah.
It's the last stop.
Exactly.
So you know the spot there. So they so give some information. What are they filming there? What was the show or what is the show?
So it's based off of a book. They're filming on 47 Main Street in Elburn.
Oh, sure.
So it's called Lovecraft County. It's based on a book that was released in 2016 called Lovecraft County. Basically, it's a series that follows...
I think it's Lovecraft Country, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Love Country County?
Yeah, Lovecraft Possibly. Country.
Country.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. It's based on a...
Whatever. Country, county, give me a break. Whatever.
It's all the same to us over in Caneville. So.
Yeah, Cane. Who cares about El? You know, there's this big, there's this big rivalry between Caneville and Elburn. It's like Eagleton and Pawnee on Parks and Recreation.
A little bit. It was supposed to be about. It was based off of a dramatic horror television series, which is interesting. That's soon to be aired on HBO. I don't know if they have the release date for that yet, but it's about a gentleman who basically travels around trying to find his father, and or is it his father or uncle, to embark on a road trip, and it's set in the 1950s era about Jim Crow laws.
Yeah, we should mention that the guy that's traveling across country is African American, and he's going across country going through a lot of white cities and a lot of white towns, and so he's meeting prejudice along his road. So that's a part of this in addition to the horror aspect. And we should mention that Jordan Peele, who just won an Academy Award for Get Out, is producing this.
Correct.
Yeah, so there's certainly some buzz about this, and when it is finally made and released because of his connection, you're going to hear a lot of stuff about this. So they filmed, a couple of days in downtown Elburn?
Yeah, it was two or three days, I believe. They had the whole street blocked off, so...
So now when you watch this show, because many times in Chicago, for instance, when they film a movie here, mm-hmm. we love to do any movie that's filmed in Chicago. We love because, oh, look at how beautiful the city looks. And there's my street. And I walk down there and everybody recognizes it. So I would assume that downtown Elburn, you can if you are driving around in Illinois, you can always look for downtown Elburn. Just look for the skyscrapers. That's how you know you're in downtown Elburn, because of the huge skyscrapers. It's amazing. I think there's even a Trump Tower there, isn't there? Yeah. So just look for this. If you're out in the boonies, then just look for the skyscrapers and drive right to them, and that's where downtown Elburn is. But will you be able to recognize your town when they film it? Is it going to be that recognizable, do you think?
Oh, definitely. But, I mean, I've grown up there, so I'm obviously familiar with the whole location. But it's really cool. The whole set, they transformed the whole inside of it to look like a 50s diner. You can see it from walking by the front window.
You mean Reams?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they turned Reams into a diner.
Yep.
Awesome.
And then they put a lot of cool signage up along the sideboard of the wall, and then there was a lot of 50s cars parked outside.
Oh, that's
on
always
the street.
Cool when they do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you could actually see the whole like production crew in chaos walking by filming.
So were you there at all? Did you go there while they were filming?
I drove by and I had parked as close as I could, and I got a small glimpse of it during the day on my lunch break. So I saw some of it in the action, so it was pretty cool. But I have some friends that live right behind where they're filming there. Mm-hmm. And so they got a lot of great pictures. So those pictures will be posted up on the podcast too. So
and so they're already done now, though. Right.
Yes. I believe they're going to start filming the rest of it in Chicago, like downtown area somewhere, but I'm not sure where.
Yeah, so they said it was kind of around on Main Street near Route 47.
Mm-hmm.
Out in so that would be the downtown Main Street, Route 47? In Elburn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I think the rest of it is actually going to be filmed in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Well, the actor Courtney Vance, I certainly know who he is. He's the star of the movie. It's called Lovecraft Country, and if you remember who Courtney Vance is, if you saw the recent the People versus O.J. Simpson series that was on FX, that was that won so many Emmy awards, Courtney Vance played Johnny Cochran on that. So that's where you may know him. And he's also done a lot of different things. He's been on Law and Order, and he's been on a lot of different shows. But most recently, if you did watch that, the People versus O.J. Simpson miniseries, he played Johnny Cochran. And so that's why you you may recognize him. So Elburn now has two significant things. The first one will always be last up on the Metro line. But now, a close number two with a bullet is its film, its appearance in the movie Lovecraft Country, which is going to be on HBO. That's no small thing.
I don't know if it's a movie. I think it might be a TV series.
Oh, a whole series.
I think so.
Oh, well, that's no small. So what they're probably the town is, you know, is this, since this is a cross country kind of story of him driving across country to find his father, then maybe Elburn will just be one little moment, maybe one episode.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to find out, but I just did some research here. And other towns that are going to be involved in are including Marengo, Odell, Mount Morris, and Pilsen neighborhood.
Oh, so they're filming throughout Illinois and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Nice. Well, congratulations. I mean, now, so let's get this straight. You are officially born in Caneville.
Yes.
But you don't tell people that.
No one knows where Caneville is.
Well, no one knows where, I got news for you. No one knows where Elburn is either.
They do
we
now.
Do now.
We
yeah.
do now.
Right.
But I love how, you know.
Everyone just hop on the Metro train over here.
Yeah.
Ogilvy.
And go straight. And just,
then just ride it for an hour and a half. And you'll get there.
Every stop. Well, the best is, so Jessica, the producer here, what I love is, like, you know, when you go on vacation and you meet somebody and they say, oh, I'm from Chicago. And you say, oh, really? So am I. Where are you from? And they say Rockford. It's like, well, wait a minute. You're not from Chicago if you're from Rockford. Or where are you from? Oh, I'm from Chicago. Where are you from? Like you said, Marengo. Wait a minute. That's not Chicago. But so what I love is if you were to tell somebody, you would say, where are you from? And you say, Elburn. And then they say, oh, really? You live in Elburn? Well, I sort of live in, I was born in Caneville, but it's just outside of Elburn. So you're using the same thing. Like, that's your big city.
Right.
That's your Mount Pilot.
That
if you lived in Mayberry.
Elburn. It's a big deal. Caneville has like two streets and two stop signs.
And at least one house, because you were living there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you still have family that, or I guess it sounds like your whole family is Caneville.
Yeah, pretty much.
400, a whopping 400 people.
It's very exciting.
Now, do you live there still or no?
No, I live in West Chicago now.
Oh, okay. So what did you say the population in Caneville was?
490.
That's in season.
It used to be 491.
Because she's not there.
But now she left.
Yeah.
In fact, when she was looking to move to West Chicago, the mayor called, please, don't leave. Don't leave. I have to have at least 495 people to get any state aid. Don't leave. Don't leave.
You had to walk out to the population sign as you enter town and kind of with a crayon, cross off the one and
write
a zero.
630 comment says, I know where both are.
Oh.
So, someone in Aurora.
We're just having
Paul
fun.
Paul from Aurora.
Do you guys have a zip code yet? I heard that was the big news, that Caneville might be getting a zip code soon.
Yeah, it's question mark.
We just became a village like 2 years ago.
Their zip code is just like 60.
Yeah, right.
They don't even get the other.
Get around to it.
They only get the other three numbers. They don't need them. Well, that's exciting. Lovecraft Country. On HBO, I would assume it's going to be on sometime in the next 6 or 7 months. If you watch that, starring Courtney Vance and produced by Jordan Peele's production company, Oscar winner Jordan Peele. For those of you who live around or who
you know, take the train and fall asleep and miss your stop and end up at the end of the line, you will recognize Elburn. And we joke. We love Elburn. I kid because I love. That's why. I love Elburn. I mock what I don't understand. And I clearly do not understand Caneville. That's for sure. We'll be back after this. No switching. Hey, it's Jim Toronto here, filling in for Matt Bubala. We are ticks away, a few ticks away from passing things on to Roger Badish. And then after Roger, we will be passing things on to Orion Samuelson. Orion, are you there?
I am here, and good morning to you. And are you guys making fun of small towns like Caneville?
Do you know Caneville?
Oh, sir, I certainly do. And, of course, Elburn,
yes.
Home of Reams Meat Market.
That's what Jessica just said, Reams Meat Market.
Oh, yeah, I've been going there for years. The
really?
Reams family has, for years, decades, has turned out good sausage and good hot dogs and good meat products.
Orion, I kid because I love. That's all
well,
it is.
Well, the town closest to our farm had 527 people.
Oh, you beat Caneville.
Yeah, that's right. But the favorite line was, it always stayed the same, 527, because when a baby was born, some man left town. So.
Oh, hi-yo! Well, as I said, I you know, being the city snob, I guess, that I am, the only way, as I said earlier, the only way I ever heard of Elburn was
yes.
because it was the last stop on the Metro line.
You're right. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, Elburn. And then Jessica mentioned that she grew up around there. I didn't know that she lived in the burgeoning metropolis of Caneville. But,
as a matter of fact, I think both of my pilots who fly Air Orient
yeah.
for me, I think, went to Caneville High School.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Look at all. Suddenly, everything leads back to Caneville. I never heard of this town, and suddenly I am inundated with Caneville trivia.
Well, write it down, and next time you get on the subject, you'll have it all in front of you.
The next time I get on the Metro line, fall asleep, and miss my stop, and end up in Elburn, I will take a side trip to Caneville.
And stop at Reams Meat Market and have a hot dog.
Very nice.